It's a hard enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly? A whole lot of sorrow in this world. There's a whole lot of shame in this world. There's a whole lot of sorrow and a whole lot of ground to gain when you spend your whole life wishing, wanting and wondering why. It's a long enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly?
Our freedom movement came alive, and because of
news break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Supporters of an anti-American cleric rioted in four Iraqi cities Sunday, battling coalition troops in the worst unrest since the spasm of looting and arson immediately after the fall of Saddam Hussein. At least 22 Iraqis, 8 U.S. troops, and 1 Salvadoran soldier died. Sunday's violence, along with the unrelated killings of 2 Marines in Anbar province, pushed the U.S. death toll to at least 610. Hundreds were wounded as fighting raged in Baghdad, Najaf, Nasiriyah, and Amara. Tanks rolled through the Iraqi capital, and 2 Humvees burned in the streets of its eastern Sadr City neighborhood. The riots were ignited by the arrest on Saturday of an aide to anti-American cleric Muqtada el-Sadr, known to his reverend followers as al-Sayed, or Master. The Bush administration may have to consider extending its June 30th deadline for the transfer of sovereignty in Iraq, or risk seeing the country lapse into civil war, the head of the U.S. Senate's Foreign Relations Panel said on Sunday. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Richard Lugar of Indiana and the panel's ranking Democrat, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, said in separate interviews that more troops may be needed to stabilize Iraq amid growing violence, including deadly clashes in a Shiite section of Baghdad that killed 7 U.S. soldiers. The lawmakers also chastised the Bush administration for failing to produce a plan to deal with the newly sovereign Iraq and touted a Biden proposal that would give NATO a major new security role and establish a UN commissioner for Iraq who would answer to the UN Security Council. John Kerry is launching a campaign to portray himself as a fiscal conservative, comparing his economic strategy with the $6 trillion in unpaid spending that he says George W. Bush has proposed over the next 10 years. A Kerry spokesman likened Bush's spending to that of a drunken sailor, saying that if a family managed their household budget like this, they'd lose their house, their car, and any hope of building a brighter future for their children. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They're full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Police rescued a Boston woman from the jaws of her 7-foot Burmese python after the snake clamped onto her arm and started squeezing. Wanda Nunes told the Boston Herald that her python Moma went for her arm shortly before she planned to feed her 2 rats Saturday morning. Her 13-year-old son called police after trying and failing to pull the snake off his mother. 2 police officers were able to pry Moma off Nunes and put her back in the cage. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ooh, Richard Clark really stung the Bushies, didn't he? Clark, a longtime counterterrorism chief, recently broke silence to reveal that George W. himself, as well as such aides as Donnie Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, refused to take the al-Qaeda terrorist threat seriously prior to September 11th, instead focusing single-mindedly on Iraq. which pose no threat to the U.S. Even after al-Qaeda terrorists attacked us, Clark says the Bushites irrationally diverted our forces to Iraq. Clark bluntly says he's outraged to see Bush now using the symbols of the September 11th horrors as a campaign device when he did nothing to stop the attacks despite ample warnings. The Bushites have since waged a White House jihad against Clark, calling him a left-wing, Democrat-hugging, partisan sourpuss who is a disgruntled, politically motivated bureaucrat angry that he didn't get a higher job in the Bush regime, and worst of all, he's a friend of an advisor to John Kerry. So there you have it. Clark has no credibility to debate over. They wish. Clark is a registered Republican. He is a career national security official with 30 years of public service. So valued was his terrorism expertise that he was continued as a top White House security aide by Ronald Reagan, Daddy George Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Morton Abramowitz, a top intelligence appointee under Reagan, says bluntly, "I can only tell you I think Dick has enormous credibility, a first-class intellect, very dedicated, a serious player. You can't overlook what Dick is saying." What he's saying is shocking. Bush and his insiders knew that Iraq was not behind September 11th, yet they knowingly sent Americans to die there under false pretenses. Clark says, "I think for a commander-in-chief to allow that to happen is unconscionable." This is Jim Hightower saying, "The Bushites can try to smear Clark, but they're the ones with an indelible stain on them."
I wonder who this unexpected guest might be. Good afternoon.
A circus. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is more versatile flooring with Plitanium Plywood from Georgia Pacific. Unlike other subfloor materials which limit your flooring options, Plitanium allows you to use hardwoods, carpeting, vinyl, or ceramic tile. Plitanium Plywood. Build it better.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use it to...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Monday morning, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you. Streaming live, beaming from radio stations from coast to coast. Coming from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. And streaming around the planet from radiopower.org with archives at whiteRoseSociety.org. You can find it all at TomHartman.com, www.TomHartman.com. You can get into our chat room, which is already filling up, which is now hosted by the Democratic Forum over on CompuServe. And no charge to join. You have to sign up, you know, so that they can make sure that they're not getting spammed and stuff. But no charge to join. So much happened over the weekend. It's really a remarkable time we live in. Here we have Nancy Pelosi. I mean, those of you who listen regularly probably remember the moment, my epiphanous moment last week. Or maybe it was the week before when it suddenly occurred to me. I think it was last Tuesday, wasn't it, that the White House cut this deal where they said, okay, Condi Rice can testify, but only if this commission gives us in writing certain agreements, certain conditions. And by the way, it's snowing again here in the People's Republic of Vermont. It's actually beautiful. Anyway, they said she can testify. The White House said she can testify under oath. We will throw her to the wolves, but only If George Bush and Dick Cheney can testify sitting next to each other holding hands. Well, the holding hands part was optional, actually. But only if any time George Bush is being questioned, Dick Cheney can be right there with him and can answer his questions for him. And only if when they are questioned, they will not be put under oath so they can feel free to lie and there will be no consequences to it. And furthermore, only if nobody else in this administration can be called to testify, regardless of what any of this testimony may bring out about the activities or culpability or problems or anything of anybody else, if this testimony raises any more questions, tough. We'll give you one condi in exchange for, you know, a Dick and George pair. And I remember when it hit me, I think I used the phrase that George W. Bush was beginning to appear like a sock puppet, or certainly that the Democrats would be. I mean, I just couldn't imagine the Democrats not leaping on this thing and going, "Ah, George Bush, the sock puppet of Dick Cheney." And sure enough, it's happened. You know, you would hope that this thing could be nonpartisan, but essentially, when the White House called out their dogs against Richard Clark, I mean, here Richard Clark comes along and says, you know, quack, 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 and the guy's a Republican. He's not saying,
Republicans bad, Democrats good,
or anything. You know, he just lays it out. There's plenty of blame to go around. He had lots of criticisms of the Clinton administration as well. But his criticisms of the Bush administration apparently cut close enough to the bone that administration just said, okay, that's it. We're going to destroy this guy. We're going to savage him. We're going to devastate him. We're going to wipe him out. And drumbeat after drumbeat. And did any of them say, what he says isn't truthful? No. Well, Bill Frist got up on the Senate floor and he said, we'd like to know if the felony of lying under oath was created by Richard Clark, was acted by Richard Clark, we'd like to declassify his testimony before Congress from 2 years ago. And then there was a soundbite there designed, you know, no doubt carefully written by Andrew Card or somebody at the White House. This little one-sentence soundbite that would be picked up by all the news media, because it certainly looks like perjury has been committed here or something to that effect. And so all of America sees, you know, Senator Bill Frist, the guy whose family made millions on private hospitals, the guy who inserted the little clause in that giant piece of health legislation 2 years ago that made it illegal to sue the vaccine manufacturers for putting mercury in the vaccines and possibly causing an epidemic of autism in the United States. The handmaiden of pharma and the for-profit health hospital and industry, not to mention the insurance companies and HMOs. Probably one of the three most corrupt politicians in Washington, D.C. You get Bill Frist up there saying something that, when you take it out as a soundbite, sounds like a senator is charging Clark with perjury. In fact, Frist wasn't charging him with perjury. He was saying, let's declassify these papers. And then afterwards they said to Bill Frist, well, did you read those papers? Were you there for that hearing? And he said, well, no, I wasn't. And no, I haven't. Oh, but he knows there was perjury. Well, so Richard Clark, of course, goes on TV the next morning and says, fine, declassify it all. I'd love it. And all of a sudden, Bill Frist shuts up and goes back into his cave. And now the Democrats are coming back out on the other side. It's really interesting. Politics makes strange bedfellows, as they say. Remember Merle Haggard? Good old Merle Haggard.
We don't smoke marijuana in school.
No, they don't. Well, maybe they do, but they don't talk about it.
We don't take no trips on LSD.
I remember when this song came out, I was a DJ.
We don't burn no draft cards down on Main.
Must have been like 69.
We like living right.
And being free. Yeah. Merle Haggard, the Okie from Muskogee. Here's the headline. In the BillingsGazette.com, the Billings Gazette, Billings, Montana. They went to Nashville, Tennessee to interview Merle Haggard. Country singer Merle Haggard says he's as red, white, and blue as they come, but he's been disappointed by how President Bush responded to the panel probing the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Haggard, 66, has been critical in songs and in interviews of the Iraq War and what he views as an erosion of individual freedom.
We still wave old glory down at the courthouse.
Yeah, except he's starting to think, having second thoughts.
Still the biggest.
He says, I certainly wasn't going to vote for Gore, so George Bush is my man.
And leather boots are still in style
but,
for manly footwear.
And this is an interview with the Associated Press. He says, but I'm not really all that happy with him.
Football is still the roughest thing on campus.
Are the Republicans beginning to turn on George Bush? Well, you can predict that the Democrats are going to, you know, have their say. Here, Nancy Pelosi, she picked up on the sock puppet thing. She says it's embarrassing to the President of the United States that they won't let him go in without holding the hand of the Vice President of the United States. Nancy Pelosi, right, the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. She said, I think it speaks to the lack of confidence the administration has in the president going forth alone. What a surprise. 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues today. Asked how Bush would do before the end of the panel if he appeared alone. You know, isn't it great that the press is asking these questions now? Well, Senator Pelosi, how do you think George would do if he were to speak alone? Have you ever seen Tony Blair on Prime Minister's Questions? You know, he has to actually answer the questions of Parliament. And they go after him ferociously. And he comes right back at it. And it's a give and take for a couple of hours. Meeting with the people's representatives. Anyhow, she says, I don't know. I guess no one wants to take that chance. I think it reinforces the idea that the president cannot go it alone. And this is what's got Merle Haggard upset. Merle Haggard is saying he's upset because of the president's weaseling and waffling with the 9/11 commission. 1-866-889-8894. Bob from Chicago, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Bob?
Well, I tell you, I'm hoping that the right's going to take so much rope, they're going to hang themselves with it. It's going to be apparent pretty soon that they've just gone a little too far. But I don't think it's apparent to everyone yet. I heard you talking about the deal that was struck by which Condi Rice would testify
right
under oath to the commission. No one's reporting it that way.
Well, actually, you know, the
like,
New York...
Like Bush totally caved in. Hardly. He hardly did.
No. He actually got more out of it than he gave. And there's no possibility now that Bush will have to testify under oath. No possibility that Cheney will have to testify under oath. No possibility that the two of them will be requested, much less required, to testify separate from each other. And no possibility that anybody else will speak.
But why is it not being reported by any mainstream media?
Well, you know, I learned about it from reading in the New York Times. I mean, I in the stories, and that story got picked up here in Burlington, so I'm not sure what you're reading, but it is out there. It's just not, you know, screaming front page stuff. What's interesting to me is how the pundits, you know, because it's the recycling of the news that's where the stories really get out, and the pundits haven't really picked that up. I mean, the Chris Matthews of the world, they're not talking about it. It's just, oh, isn't this nice? Condi's going to testify. Gee, it's going to make great theater. You know, it's like getting ready for the OJ trial. You know, we're going to have another 2-hour slow motion train wreck kind of thing. Here's where it gets even more outrageous, Bob. The White House, this is in a Reuters story, Dateline yesterday, and, you know, Reuters, news all over the world, article by Randall Hellickson. The White House will vet, you know what vet means, right? It's as in, you know, read it and decide whether or not it's okay or not. We'll vet line by line the report of an independent commission investigating the September 11 commission attacks before it is publicly released, the commission chairman said on Sunday. Chairman Thomas Keene, a former Republican governor of New Jersey, said on CBS or NBC's Meet the Press that he was surprised to learn of the White House review. They're not even going to let the report come out to the public until the White House has gone through line by line, and they're saying now that may take until after November. What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if it can be found in the mainstream press, you really have to look for it. Do you think it's because media ownership become so consolidated and the few people who are controlling the voices are kind of got Bush in their pocket?
Could be. I think that there's a big element with the big media of not wanting to end up like Helen Thomas, never being called on, in the back of the room. I mean, these guys, they really do want to suck up to power. I also think that is this news or not? You know, there's so much other stuff happening that gets paid to attention to too. Bob, thanks for the call. It's Tom Hartman.
Take care.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version. version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Cause in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud, I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. You're in the real free speech zone. Not one of those little cages that the Bush administration puts up near his campaign events. Seems to have been a slight diminution in that kind of activity recently. I don't know. It'll pick back up again. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in. The White House is now going to vet the 9/11 report. We just learned this weekend. Thomas Keene, the head of the commission, goes on NBC News and he says, guess what I just learned? White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card is going to go oversee the vetting of the 9/11 report. To quote former Republican Governor of New Jersey Chairman Thomas Keene, they go through it line by line. He also said he would have preferred that the U.S. President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney appear separately before the commission rather than together as they are stated to do under an agreement between the panel and the White House. Already, some material, particularly focusing on any Saudi role in the attacks, remains classified. Keep in mind, 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. Keene says he believes the White House doesn't want to risk leaks or to see the report released close to the elections. Now, he's saying he thinks, you know, let's get this thing out by July. But the White House has all of a sudden said, we're going to go through it line by line. Now, there's going to be thousands and thousands of pages. And then you got Lee Hamilton, who's the co-chair. He's a former U.S. Democratic congressman from Indiana. He says he has long been troubled by the near exclusive legal authority given the president over the release of intelligence information. He says, we're not going to let them distort our report. We do not want to put out a report with heavy redactions, that's deletions in it. Yeah, good luck, Mr. Hamilton. And asked why Bush and Cheney were going to do the Is Bush a Sock Puppet routine? Appearing together, Karen Hughes, the master of the soft brush stroke in painting George Bush, said that it was because they were often together for briefings before the attacks. Well, actually, Cheney's commission, Cheney was put in charge of this commission, and it never met the terrorism commission. Of course, his energy commission met and produced a marvelous document with the help of Ken Lay. But the terrorism never met. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Let me tell you what I think here. I think America, the so-called freest and most powerful country in the world, has a juvenile presidency. His father buys him out of trouble and into office. His brothers steal with and for him. The media covers up for him. And last but not least, his mother still tucks him in. How could anybody go wrong in the son of a Bush's shoes?
Yeah, I don't think his mother still tucks him in, Armin. I think you're wrong on at least one of those points there. I think his mother's over in Kenny Bunkport in the family estate, or in Connecticut in the family, or in one of the many family estates all around the world. But I don't think she tucks him in.
So, I think she does when she visits him at the White House.
Got to be careful.
She probably even makes him hot chocolate with his cute little colorful marshmallows in it.
I suspect she's trained Laura on how to do that quite well, don't you
no,
think?
No, I think she tucked somebody else in.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Armin. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Guess who is moving to NBC? You would think NBC, their hiring criteria for their news division, let's get some news people. Let's get people who really, you know, journalism school graduates. Yes. Well, no. I'll tell you about that right after this break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes after the hour.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking?
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
March's unemployment rate jumped up a tenth of a percent to 5.7%, even though 308,000 new jobs were created last month. The good news is the nation's manufacturing sector, which has been hemorrhaging jobs for more than three straight years, actually gained some in March. The bad news is that America's workforce participation rate, which measures those working and those actively looking for work, fell to 65.8%, its lowest level in two decades. The time it takes someone to find a new job continues to creep upward as well. The unemployed can expect to spend a little more than 5 months now on their hunt.
The U.S. Army reopens its Walt Disney World Resort. Shades of green, but the park's magic is gone as far as its former employees are concerned. That's because the once unionized $92 million resort, which is open only to military members and veterans, now employs only one union member. Between 60 to 100 jobs belonging to members of the American Federation of Government Employees were contracted out by the Army to private non-union companies.
The $500-plus million stock swindling and corruption case against former Tyco International CEO L. Dennis Kozlowski and CFO Mark Swart suffered a serious setback Friday when the judge declared a mistrial. This after nearly two full weeks of tense jury deliberations and controversy over hand gestures a female panelist made to the executive's team of defense lawyers. The mistrial came about after that same juror reported receiving a threatening letter at her home sometime on Thursday. Manhattan's district attorney vows to retry the Tyco case. A new hearing's been scheduled for early May.
Popcorn lung may afflict workers far beyond the Jasper, Missouri plant where the disease was first diagnosed. According to NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, debilitating lung problems have sprung up among employees of four out of five popcorn plants the agency has investigated. NIOSH has also heard reports of lung ailments from three other popcorn factories and four factories producing the artificial butter flavoring believed to be responsible for popcorn lung.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with a scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm just an aging drummer boy, and in the wars I used to play, and I've called a tune to many a torture session. Now they say I am a war criminal, and I'm fading away.
Father, please hear my confession.
And welcome back. It's the Drew People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 26 minutes before the hour. Okay, here's the story. The new executive vice president for communications at NBC. A chief communications executive position will be Anna Perez. Her last job, director of communications at the National Security Council. I love the television business, she said. I have no expertise in it, so I will have a bit of a learning curve. Interesting. Is this, is this payback? Is it a highly qualified person moving from job to job, or is it the administration placing one of their people where they, you know, it would be interesting to see a little background on that story. Unfortunately, this was just your basic New York Times piece, here's what's so. I'm still waiting for them to do a story on Thomas A. Scully. I'm just amazed that nobody has pointed out who he was and what he did before he headed up Medicare and what he's doing since. But, you know, life goes on. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Kodak's on the line. Hey, Kodak, how you doing?
I'm fine. Yourself?
I'm great. You're at an undisclosed location.
Yes, I'm at my home base, so I'm in an undisclosed place in North Carolina.
Okay, great. What's up?
Over the weekend, I was reading a story on the Internet in the Guardian, the UK's paper, regarding an article that's going to be coming out that's going to show that Bush and Blair had an agreement for regime change over in Iraq way before the actual invasion. invasion took place, and they're also going to release documents that give you a timeline of events to show how the ambassador.
Are you still there? Are you still there, Kodak? I think we've lost him. Boy, we have. He's vanished! Hey, Kodak, feel free to call back if you want to finish that thought. But I'll tell you, the con response to that will be, well, yeah, the Clinton administration actually signed a finding of some sort suggesting that changing the regime in Iraq was a desirable thing. The difference, of course, is that for a government to say, you know, we're all in favor of changing the regime, we really think that this guy's a bad guy, he's killing his own people, he's doing nasty things, whatever, that's one thing. But on the other hand, to say we're going to put 600 of our young men and women in a situation where they are going to die. We're going to put 12 to 18,000 of our soldiers in a situation where they're going to have to be medically evacuated. We're going to put hundreds of thousands of soldiers in a position where, as in the Gulf War, fully a third of them now are on disability. Another story I haven't gotten to yet. We'll get to somewhere in the 3 hours of the program today. New evidence, growing evidence of depleted uranium contamination of many of the troops in Iraq, and not just the ones who were handling the stuff or around it. You know, the stuff, it vaporizes, it turns to dust, it's fairly heavy, it settles in the dirt around you. You kick up the dirt, you get a sandstorm, you inhale the stuff, and boom. And this is nuclear waste. We have spread hundreds of, I don't know if it's hundreds of tons or tens of tons, but many, many, many tons of nuclear waste on the country of Iraq and Bosnia, and it's starting to be a problem. And there's, you know, a lot of folks who think that this is why there have been so many Iraqi children who've been born with birth defects and things. It's a serious, serious problem. Anyhow, this administration said, yes, we should have regime change, and therefore we're going to take the military in and we're going to turn George W. into a great war president. And, the previous administrations said, no, we really ought to focus on al-Qaeda. We've got Saddam in a box. Let's keep him there, which I think was, a wise step. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County's on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. Keep up your good efforts. You'll be happy to know that you're getting through to your screener, who finds himself agreeing with you every once in a while now.
that's sneaky. That's Rama Schneider is filling in today for Louise and Rama, who fills in for me from time to time. He's a wonderful guy, a good friend, and he's come over here to give us a break on Mondays. So if you ever want to say hi to Rama, give us a call on Monday.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about this.
And Rama's doing his own radio show, by the way, which you can listen to on radiopower.org.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Him and his wife, Grace. You'll find more details about it at radiopower.org.
I'll try to do that.
So anyhow, your point, Dave.
Well, I want to talk a bit about Condoleezza's appearance, but I'm thinking, I think the foundation of this administration, this presidency, is to steal what you can, to take it from the very needy and put it in the pockets of the very rich. I think that underlies almost everything of what Bush is about. I was just listening to a very powerful talk from Ted Kennedy. It was aired on C-SPAN, and he calls it like it is. Anyway, the philosophy seems to be that you can fool most of the people, or enough of the people, enough of the time, that you can probably get away with it.
Yeah.
I think Condoleezza's appearance is going to be very prepared, very well staged and rehearsed. I think she will be there to give a prepared speech with the best image she can put forward. And then there will be a few posturing questioners trying to be photogenic, and this thing will be over, and we will not have learned a thing. I think that's going to be the planned purpose. I don't see anybody starting out asking, is it purely coincidence that some of Cheney and Bush's people are making an awful lot of money on this war in Iraq? I think that's where I would want to start with her. But anyway...
Well, speaking of Bush and Cheney's people making a lot of money on the war in Iraq, one of the folks in our chat room, and this is one of the really cool things about the chat, somebody just posted this link maybe 5 minutes ago. I was looking at it during the break, and I can't at this moment. In fact, I was going to put this on hold and do a little more research into it. It's an article by Michael Chuzadovsky at globalresearch.ca, a Canadian investigative journalism site, and it says, unknown to most, Unocal's partner in the SunGas Trans Afghan Pipeline Consortium. This is the one that we're going to put across Afghanistan that got put on hold in 1998 and is now back on again. The Saudi company Delta Oil is owned by Bin Mahfouz and El Amoudi, clans, which allegedly have ties to Bin Laden's Al Qaeda. According to a 1998 Senate testimony by former CIA Director James Woolsey, powerful financier Khalid Bin Mahfouz's younger sister is married to Osama bin Laden. Okay, you're starting to see some connections here. Now here's where it gets even weirder. Bin Mahfouz is suspected to have funneled millions of dollars to the Al-Qaeda terror network. Now, by sheer coincidence, we discover former New Jersey Governor Thomas Keene, the man chosen by President Bush to head the 9/11 Commission, also has business ties with Bin Mahfouz and Al Hamoudi. He's the director and shareholder of Emerita Hess Corporation, which is involved in the Hess Delta joint venture with the Delta Oil of Saudi Arabia. This is, putting the pipeline across Afghanistan. This is the head of the 9/11 Commission.
Well, probably just another dreadful coincidence, I suppose.
No doubt about it, Dave.
One good thing was going to come from Bush's administration. I think historians have always been debating who was the worst president. Was it Fillmore or Buchanan or Nixon or whatever? I think forever after, there will be no question.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Dave, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. John Dean, speaking of historians. Here's a guy who was not only lived through history, wrote a book about history, but was part of history. John Dean was on Bill Moyers on Friday. I missed it. I was traveling, but he said, apparently, here I have the transcript of it here. Clearly, it is an impeachable offense, what George Bush did, he said. I think that the case is overwhelming that these people presented false information to the Congress and to the American people. There are many things worse than Watergate, John Dean says. Taking the nation to war in a time when they might not have had to go to war, and people dying. And he goes on to point out, no one died for Nixon's so-called Watergate abuses. He says, if there's anything that really is the bottom line, it's taking the nation to war in a time when they might not have had to go to war. That is worse than Watergate. And Dean in his book writes, the evidence is overwhelming that George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney have engaged in deceit and deception over going to war in Iraq, and this is an impeachable offense. Oh, for a Democratic House and Senate. I mean, you know, the bottom line here is that it's not going to go anywhere. Unless, see, this is why it's so important to vote in the House and Senate races come November. It's so vitally important to vote in these races because if you have the same party controlling the Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the presidency and the White House, then they can do anything with impunity. They can cover up absolutely anything, as we are seeing. Robert from Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning. It's an honor to talk to you, Tom.
Thank you, Robert.
I'd like to ask you a question. I'd like to relate this September 11th, 2001, to 1973 in Chile. When Allende was overthrown, the CIA, the International Telephone and Telegraph, the elite and local corporations put a tremendous pressure on the society. It brought the people to their knees. I remember the truck stoppages and people couldn't get it. Things. And I'm just wondering if you think that the corporations in America could add enough jobs pre-November to affect the numbers and then just lay off the people after the election. It probably wouldn't cost them much more money, if any more, than soft money they used to give.
Well, here's how I see it playing out. First of all, I don't think that corporate America says, "Gee, let's make jobs in order to get George Bush reelected." They give him money. They do the things that are clear and conspicuous. But they're not going to make bad business decisions. I think what is happening is we have the exact same situation. The replay, the exact same situation that had happened during the Reagan administration. Reagan came into office. The economy was somewhat sluggish. It had been for a while. It was basically we were squeezing the fat out left over from the Vietnam War, where Lyndon Johnson tried to have guns and butter. You know, he had a huge welfare program that exploded in size. Plus, he had the Vietnam War, and he ran the country into debt. And Jimmy Carter was actually the first president since Jack Kennedy to propose a balanced budget. And that, you know, and it wasn't the very best time. So Ronald Reagan comes along, and he borrows $1 trillion from you and me. I mean, you and I are now paying back Reagan's debt of 20 years ago. And,
right.
And, you know, to the tune of over $400 billion a year out of the federal budget that we are paying in interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up. The debt was less than $1 trillion when Reagan came into office. It was over almost $3 trillion when he left. And most of that money went to domestic defense contractors for the Star Wars program. But basically, you take a bowl full of money, you know, $1 trillion, $2 trillion, and you pour it pretty much anywhere, even if it goes just to the rich. You pour it anywhere in the United States, and you're going to see a very positive result 6 months, a year down the road. And that's what this administration has been betting on, the whole tax cut thing, which is really a tax deferral. I mean, they're not into tax and spend, and they're not into, you know, reducing. They're into tax and borrow and spend. So what has happened is we are now seeing the consequence of George W. Bush borrowing $2 to $3 trillion in your name and mine, which will have to be paid back by our children, dumping it into the economy in some ways not in the wisest way. I mean, if you really wanted to stimulate the economy, you'd do things like the highway bill and you know, get people to work, right? But, you know, a lot of it instead is going to these big defense contractors, and a lot of it's going into Iraq. But that money is filtering back to the United States. Eventually, you know, as Halliburton makes their money in Iraq, they bring it back into the United States. It's coming back, and it's stimulating the economy. It's absolutely predictable that it would. And we are seeing some economic stimulus here. So, you know, that's what's going to happen. Now, the downside is that it is incredibly fragile to do it that way. Number one, the country's going into debt so badly that our currency has dropped almost 30% relative to the euro. I mean, the rest of the world is looking at us and going, these guys are financial idiots. We're not going to loan them any more money. And so, you know, the value of our currency is dropping. And that is absolutely going to, it's leading, number one, to an increase in the price of oil, because the oil, most of the oil is produced outside the United States. And they say, hey, we want to have the same purchasing power, so we're going to have to raise the price since the dollar's worth less. And secondly, it is absolutely going to cause inflation in the United States. In fact, it already has. All you have to do is look at the gas pump, go to the supermarket, and look at what your average bill is. You know, they have been playing with the numbers to try and keep these phony inflation numbers down. But everybody in America knows there is real inflation. It's really happening. And when the Fed, after November, has to raise the overnight rate at which they loan money to banks, which then will raise the prime, which then will raise the home mortgage rates, suddenly housing values all across America are going to start falling because people buy houses not based on the sticker price of the house, but on the monthly payments. And the monthly payments are a function of interest rates. And when that happens, that third bubble is going to burst, the housing bubble, and the whole house of cards is going to come down. And Bush is just hoping he can keep this bubble, you know, this balloon blown up, and so it doesn't pop before the election. I mean, that's the bottom line. Hope I answered your question there.
Well, you did. I think
in Venezuela there are parallels to Chile, by the way, to get back to your original point. I think the situation in Venezuela is very similar to the situation in Chile. I think what's happening in the United States is probably closer to what happened in Argentina, where you had a very similar situation. The government tried to spend it to borrow its way into prosperity, and then the IMF came in and said, you can't do that anymore, and wham, down came the hammer, and it threw Argentina into a tailspin. The IMF has warned us, but they don't have that kind of power over us, but the markets do. And when interest rates go up, as they will, it's going to catch us. It's going to catch us really bad. So those
All
are
right.
my thoughts on that, Robert. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thank you
it. 1-866-889-8894. I got, Chris in New Mexico. But, Chris, we're right up against the break here. Hang on. I'll take your call right after the break, okay?
Sure enough.
All right. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-889-8894. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New UN regulations for commercial shipping address a major problem with tiny stowaways. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global trade and shipping has given rise to a global problem with foreign organisms that travel in the ballast water of ships. The United Nations recently adopted the first international standards to deal with this problem. Ship owners and ports will have more than 5 years to put them into practice, but these new regulations for handling ballast water will be mandatory. Ships routinely take in ballast water when they're traveling without cargo, and they dump it when they get to their destinations. The ballast water is essential for keeping the ship stable at sea. The problem is that the water is usually filled with plants and animals, and when they're released into foreign waters, they can wreak havoc on native species. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. Corbett says the regulations show that the international community is responding to some environmental effects of global commerce. He says the regulations set mandatory standards for treating ballast water to filter out or kill invading organisms before the ballast is dumped out. He says these are the first regulations of their kind, and if the global standards don't provide enough protection for coastal ecosystems, he says the rules allow countries to set even stricter standards.
The recognition in this treaty that regions may set stricter standards is really very important and does demonstrate that the international community understands the nature of this global problem and its regional differences.
The new ballast water rules were adopted in February by the UN's International Maritime Organization. Corbett says ships will have 5 to 12 years to adopt treatment technologies that meet the new standards. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a strange old game to learn slow. One step forward and it's back to go. You're standing on the throttle, you're standing on the brake. In the groove till you make a mistake. Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. Sometimes it all comes together, but sometimes you're a fool.
Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. George, take notice. 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up? Maybe that's not Chris in New Mexico. Oh,
question.
I got to turn the volume up. There you go. Sorry
Thank
about
you.
That.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think the chances are that the much-vaunted transfer of power to the Iraqi people is actually going to happen, given that we're now being openly attacked by Shia Muslims in the streets?
Yeah, and we now have two competing factions. And Bremer just signed two orders. This is deep down in my pile. I haven't gotten to reading it yet. Perhaps we'll get to it the next hour. I think actually I have it set up for the third hour of the program. Bremer just signed two executive orders, one saying that it's going to be illegal for the Iraqi government, regardless of whatever they want to do, to reverse the privatization, that is the sale of Iraq's assets to Americans and American companies.
Of course.
And which is one of the things that's got Iraqis furious. I mean, they've opened their borders, they've got all these cheap imports coming in, and the Iraqi corporations, businesses, they're not particularly efficient, they can't compete, and they're being wiped out. So you've got this huge unemployment problem. And the other being that the American military will retain its preeminence, it will retain its role in a supervisory role. The American military will be able to tell the Iraqi military what to do. So I think I got to move along here real quickly, Chris, but thanks for the call. I think the whole thing is just a sham. It's Phil in Florida, Tom Hartman Radio Program, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
I'm here in Florida. Most people have never heard of a place called Safety Harbor. Not in Miami, but let me tell you what happened on the 31st of March.
Okay. We're running out of time here, so it's got to be fast.
The professionals.
Yeah.
You know how many people showed up? 10,000.
10,000 people showed up looking for a job.
Yeah. Now, you had this Beck guy on the radio this morning when I was eating my breakfast, and him saying that people who have college degrees, there's only a 3% unemployment rate.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, one of the largest hotel chains advertised, or used to advertise, about 2 years ago, they were running ads pointing out that over 30% of their bellmen had college degrees.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when they talk about jobs creating, what jobs?
Yeah. Well, that's,
all jobs are not equal.
That's the thing. 75% of the jobs that were created, of these 300,000 jobs that were created, were filled by teenagers.
And yeah.
So, anyhow, thanks for the call, Phil. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. It wraps up this hour. Ben in Elgin, Illinois. We got a guest starting the next hour. We'll catch you a little later on.
Website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Supporters of an anti-American cleric rioted in four Iraqi cities Sunday, battling coalition troops in the worst unrest since the spasm of looting and arson immediately after the fall of Saddam Hussein. At least 22 Iraqis, 8 U.S. troops, and 1 Salvadoran soldier died. Sunday's violence, along with the unrelated killings of 2 Marines in Anbar province, pushed the U.S. death toll to at least 610. Hundreds were wounded as fighting raged in Baghdad, Najaf, Nasiriyah, and Amara. Tanks rolled through the Iraqi capital and 2 Humvees burned in the streets of its eastern Sadr City neighborhood. The riots were ignited by the arrest on Saturday of an aide to anti-American cleric Muqtada el-Sadr, known to his reverend followers as al-Sayed, or Master. The Bush administration may have to consider extending its June 30th deadline for the transfer of sovereignty in Iraq, or risk seeing the country lapse into civil war, the head of the U.S. Senate's Foreign Relations panel said on Sunday. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Richard Lugar of Indiana and the panel's ranking Democrat, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, said in separate interviews that more troops may be needed to stabilize Iraq amid growing violence, including deadly clashes in a Shiite section of Baghdad that killed 7 U.S. soldiers. The lawmakers also chastised the Bush administration for failing to produce a plan to deal with the newly sovereign Iraq and touted a Biden proposal that would give NATO a major new security role and establish a UN commissioner for Iraq who would answer to the UN Security Council. John Kerry is launching a campaign to portray himself as a fiscal conservative, comparing his economic strategy with the $6 trillion in unpaid spending that he says George W. Bush has proposed over the next 10 years. A Kerry spokesman likened Bush's spending to that of a drunken sailor, saying that if a family managed their household budget like this, they'd lose their house, their car, and any hope of building a brighter future for their children. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They're full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Police rescued a Boston woman from the jaws of her 7-foot Burmese python after the snake clamped onto her arm and started squeezing. Wanda Nunes told the Boston Herald that her python Moma went for her arm shortly before she planned to feed her 2 rats Saturday morning. Her 13-year-old son called police after trying and failing to pull the snake off his mother. 2 police officers were able to pry Moma off Nunes and put her back in the cage. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mendocino County has declared itself free of GMOs. GMOs are the frankenfoods of Monsanto and other global biotech giants that have been merrily messing with the very DNA of life, splicing drugs, pesticides, sex hormones, animal genes, and who knows what else into our tomatoes, potatoes, corn, soybeans, and other foodstuffs. Since the long-term effects of these genetically modified organisms on our health and environment have not been tested, many nations have banned them. Our own happy-go-lucky corporate government in Washington, however, has hugged the GMO makers like family, showing no interest in protecting we the people from these we-don't-give-a-damn corporations. So it's up to we the people to protect ourselves. The good folks of Mendocino County, California, took the lead, proposing Measure H, a ballot initiative to ban all GMO crops and animals from being raised in their county. It was supported not only by consumers and environmentalists, but also by local merchants, farmers, and wineries. The pro-Frankenfood forces were led by the bucolic-sounding Crop Life America. Who? It's a lobbying and political front funded by Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, Bayer, and other multi-billion dollar biotechies. These outsiders dumped $500,000 into their campaign, which is a ton of cash in a county with only 47,000 people. The corporate opponents also resorted to all sorts of campaign nastiness, including sending their lawyers to try to censure the ballot language, disguising the source of their funding, and using negative push polls. CropLife outspent the local proponents of Measure H by 7-1. But as campaign spearhead Els Cooperrider put it, they had the money, we had the people. And the people poured it on, winning by a sweeping 12-point margin. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, other counties all across the country are following Mendocino's lead. To join the rebellion, call 218-226-4164.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman radio program broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. All across the United States on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. Beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system. Streaming around the planet at radiopower.org and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find links to all of it from tomhartman.com. Last week we had a couple of folks on from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a group that PRWatch.org describes as an ideologically driven, well-funded front for corporations opposed to safety and environmental regulations that affect the way they do business.
end quote. I doubt that Fred Smith, the president of Competitive Enterprise Institute, would describe himself and his organization that way. Fred, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good. It's always nice to know how your enemies see you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, let's figure out if we're enemies or not. Why? I'm assuming, you know, the taking money from corporations is gravy. I mean, you know, most of us do that. It's called having a job. But I'm assuming that there's more to what you do than just being a front group for whoever gives you the most money.
Sure. Well, you know, America is a nation of obviously a very large array of values, tastes, positions. We're a country that decided that tolerance was going to be had to be something, because we were Protestants and Catholics and Jews and atheists and everything else. So we didn't fight religious wars. We decided we'd live together. So any policy debate in America has economic groups, the groups who are doing it because it benefits their bottom line, labor unions, city governments, corporations, and groups who have an ideological point of view of how they think the world should work, the religious, moral groups, Naderite groups, those groups like CEI. Our perspective is, well, Nader and I have a sort of a similar view of the problems of the world, but Nader views when you got a problem, get government involved. And my view is if you got a problem and you get government involved, you got two problems.
Why?
Well, because government is not centralized approaches to decentralized problems rarely can mobilize either the information you need to solve them. You and I know more about the particularities of our circumstances than someone in the capital of our state or in the capital of our nation.
But
and motivating
I, you know,
us
hang,
is very
hang,
difficult
hang,
to do.
Hang on just a second, Fred. Government doesn't necessarily mean Washington, D.C. I mean, I live in a little town in Vermont. We have a government.
We have a government, and I live in a cooperative apartment house, and in a sense, it's kind of a quasi-private government. So, yeah, there are areas where you want to work together to solve collective problems. The difficulty is when you go from small groups to larger groups, the individual influence in that process disappeared. You end up not with democracy. You end up with interest group democracy. Those interest groups can be the corporate world you're worried about, or they can be the ideological world I tend to worry about.
But isn't there one fundamental difference? For example, when I get screwed on my health insurance, right? We're having running battles with one of the big national health insurance companies over every little thing. I mean, you know, you submit any little doctor bill or whatever, you know, and oh, we forgot it. We lost it. You've got to submit it three times. And dealing with this huge corporate bureaucracy. Well, I can sort of understand that because the Supreme Court has ruled that a corporation has to enhance its bottom line. That's its purpose for existence, is to make a profit. In fact, the whole point of the Tyco trial, or one of the points of the Tyco trial, is that if a corporation's chief executives and board of directors don't act in a way that enhances shareholder value, they've failed in their fiduciary responsibility.
Absolutely.
And they've committed a crime. Now, government, on the other hand, at least in theory, government, on the other hand, is not created invented to create a profit.
It's supposed to advance the public good.
That's right.
Maintain a structure where you and I can live our lives and advance our own dreams.
Right. So why not say, okay, if government isn't behaving the way it should, we should fix government, rather than say government isn't behaving the way it should, let's replace it with a for-profit corporation. I don't understand that.
Well, the argument, I mean, obviously this is a very long discussion, but the argument is that the idea that government can in some way resemble an efficient producer of the public good is a theory. It turns out, and this is not new, back when the Progressive Era launched this whole expansion of government in the United States, progressivism in the United States, socialism in Europe, the idea was we had finally found a way of turning the imperfect institutions of government into a tool that could finally deliver on the goals we all wanted, a better life for the people of the country. The idea was we would create independent agencies, the FCC, the FTC, the blah, blah, blah. We would staff them with well-trained civil servants who, by going to the right universities, would be brilliant mandarins and so forth. And we would immunize them from politics by making the agencies independent. So we would have political goals without political problems. Less patronage, less corruption, less incompetence, more responsiveness to the citizenry. Well, the theory was interesting, but it didn't work. Bureaucrats are hard to motivate. I just came from the post office. It's lunchtime, so the people had all taken their breaks. I went to the bank, and the lunchtime, everybody was there. markets worry about congestion. Governments don't. That's a tiny
right,
example.
Right, but the post office has to do with the commons and the bank doesn't. I mean, there's a fundamental difference. You can't compare apples and oranges like
that. Is that a commons? What's common about getting a letter from A to B?
We have agreed in the United States since Ben Franklin first invented the post office in Philadelphia, and really in Europe long before that, that delivering communication was such an essential part of the infrastructure. It was essential for business to function. It was essential for families to maintain communication, that we would consider it part of the commons, and it always has been in the United States.
Well, that's one of the... Of course, that's true. Yeah, I mean, not quite.
And I think it's incredible that I can put 37 cents on a piece of paper and 2 days later it appears in Los Angeles. I mean, that just boggles my mind.
But it's also why, of course, they're in such trouble economically and so forth.
The trouble is fairly minor. I mean, they're talking about...
The tragedy of the commons, though, which, of course, is what you're dealing with, the process of civilization, I would argue, is a gradual transformation of what was all a commons. After all, 10,000 years ago, this land was your land, this land was my land. We didn't have private property. We didn't have individualized family units. We didn't have a whole series of things.
Oh, come on. Tribal people have always had individual family units, and they've always had limited amounts of private property.
Collective. The original tribes were hunting bands. Families evolved sometime in the last, 50,000? We don't know when, but they certainly were not there. Chimpanzees don't have family units.
Sure they do.
No, they don't have them in the same. They're extended units that don't. They're not the mom and pop and the children.
Yeah, yes, they do, and they are. I've written books about this. I mean, trust me, I'm right.
That's kind of property. We certainly didn't have property rights, private property rights.
Sure, they do.
Collective property rights. The tribe owned it in common. Right?
No. There are chimps actually. In fact, one of the more interesting things that's been found in the last decade or so is that chimps actually make tools, and mostly to extract ants, and that they own the tools, and that they get very proprietary about you. Somebody takes their tools, they get very upset.
But private property evolved, and that's right. Chimpanzees had it. Earlier species didn't. What I'm arguing is that...
Oh, sure they do. They're territorial. I mean, even marmots are territorial. Private property has been in our genes.
Tom, the point I'm trying to make is that civilization is a gradually freeing up of the individual freedom and entrepreneurial spirit by creating institutions that allow something that I do to rebound largely to my credit if it's good and largely to my discredit if it's bad, and essentially allowing us to take as a society more prudent risk by freeing the individual to realize their creative talents.
Yeah, and I think we're both in agreement that, well, I wouldn't say that's what civilization's all about, but I'd say that that's what competition, that's what a relatively free market should be about. That's how business should work, and it enhances it. It's a good thing, but the rules of the game. I mean, business can't exist without commons that are provided by you and me. I mean,
no, that's not true. That's silly.
Okay,
look, you're talking about the radio waves, for example.
No, Fred, let's say...
The radio waves were first invented, first found out about. There was a rapid move to colonize them, to homestake them, to turn them into useful private properties. That was the Progressive Era. The Progressive Era came in and nationalized the whole electromagnetic spectrum, and now, almost 100 years later, we're trying to sort it out and figure out how to get some more value out of it.
Fred, how could your business operate if you didn't drive on public streets?
Well, of course. When you've got a government that is so intrusive as our government is, doing so many, many things, then, of course, it's very hard to imagine how a private world might operate. And so for a long time, we're going to be living in a quasi-socialized world. But the goal of civilization is to find more. Today, in the New York Times, there was an article about how for the first time the Congress of the United States has seemingly been willing to consider toll roads, beginning to move roads away from the commons to a you-pay-you-get type approach, which is a much more sensible approach to do it. And some of the liberal groups, progressive groups, are in favor of this issue.
So those who are wealthy enough to use the roads can, and those who aren't can't.
No, that's not the way
we're going to ration travel.
Well, of course, you ration everything in life. You already do that. If you're not rich enough to get a car, you don't ride. But the point we've done, what we can do now is the people who, for whatever reason, they may be poor, but they're not necessarily. They may be people who have a real need for timely movement from A to B. That's the working poor often. We'll pay for the express lanes and therefore reduce the congestion, i.e. reduce the price of traveling on the less congested lane. That's what markets do. They benefit. Actually, rich people do well in any culture, in any society, in any form of organization. It's the market economy that has allowed the poor to do so well in America compared to anywhere else in the world.
Okay, so then let's bring this around to the topic that we were actually going to talk about today, and that is you're suggesting that outsourcing is a good thing for America.
It is a good thing for America.
Because?
Because it has allowed places like Walmart to stock their shelves with items that can democratize the privileges that the rich have always had. The stores in America allow people to make their dollar, their scarce dollars, go further than anywhere else in the world. And they do it because in America we allow relatively free trade. Part of that free trade is allowing our shirts to be made, our fabric to be made one place, the cutting to be done somewhere else, the buttons to be put on somewhere else, the final fabrication somewhere else, outsourcing within and outside the United States. And the result is we have products that are more affordable than ever in history, allowing the poor in America to live better lives than anywhere else in history.
So you're using the old Walmart argument, we're doing this for the poor people. Don't you think the poor people would much rather have better paying jobs and have to pay maybe 10% more at Walmart?
Everybody wants better paying jobs and lower priced goods. I mean, everybody wants
No, I'm perfectly willing to have a better paying job and higher priced goods.
Well, of course you are, but you're not exactly the working poor, are you?
I think the working poor would be very happy if the increase in their pay was greater than the increase in the products that they're buying.
The trouble.
Well, they have. I mean, we had this golden era of the middle class that lasted 40, 50 years in the United States when monopolies were discouraged. It wasn't until Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and similar laws, and we had the merger and acquisition mania that all this stuff came about. And now the middle class is being eviscerated.
Antitrust regulation in another time. Suffice it to say that the groups that were attacked for being trust. The prices were dropping faster than the economy as a whole, and therefore were generating even more benefits for the peoples of America than the area.
In many cases, those prices, as is so well documented in the case of Standard Oil of Ohio, for example, the prices were dropping in order to wipe out competition.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful argument, isn't it? I have to punish you today for doing a consumer benefit because tomorrow I'm afraid you might do something badly. Shouldn't we let people get the benefits of the lower prices rather than penalize them immediately?
Not if it's destructive to society. Fred Smith, hold on. We're talking with Fred Smith, CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. CEI.org is your website there, Fred, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Hang on. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward?
combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman back with you. We're talking with Fred L. Smith, president of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a free market policy, public policy group established in 1984. Fred, 8 months, this is a story from CBS News. 8 months after a factory that makes television screens shut down, an invasion of sorts has landed in Pennsylvania. Scavenger crews are now dismantling the plant for a Chinese company that's bought the equipment and plans to put it to work on its own soil. Scott Conway, a laid-off worker, says it's hard to watch our jobs going down the road in tractor trailers. Once this project is finished and the equipment is reassembled in its new plant in China, the workers won't be making $18 an hour. Over there, the average wage is closer to $2 a day. The factory's owner, Corning, claims it no longer makes sense to build the screen in Pennsylvania. As for Corning's laid-off workers, some have found jobs taking apart their old plant. Freda, which should have a higher priority, national economic health or the profits of transnational corporations?
National economic health, obviously. Well, actually, not national economic health. What you're trying to do is to make a society where people can realize their own aspirations. And since economics is in most people's aspirations, you want a world that allows individuals to be as wealthy, as prosperous as they can be.
So, and you believe that outsourcing is going to help accomplish that?
Sure, because not only does it help Americans by giving us not only lower prices, which frees up resources we can use to buy other goods, many bought in America. Most of the goods we buy, after all, are made here. It's only so when you free up a dollar of resources, 20% or whatever the number is might go, 20 cents might go abroad, but 80 cents will create new jobs here in America. But also, it gives us a chance to have a higher quality product. One of the geniuses of a global economy, which is we're just beginning to realize, a problem happens here, say at 4 o'clock. Because we're in a 24/7 world, that problem can be addressed by a help desk in India or some other part of the world for the next 12 hours, and by the time we wake up the next morning, that particular problem may be well on its way to resolution.
What's wrong with Americans working three shifts?
Nothing wrong with it, but normally...
But we have to pay them too much! But we have to pay them too much. We've got to say, this is really about cheap labor, isn't it, Fred?
No, it's not just about cheap labor. It's about productivity. The way societies like the United States do so well is that the plants you were talking about being dismantled and shipped abroad, this has been happening since the beginning of the United States. New plants become obsolete and they're shipped to places where the productivity of labor is lower, and therefore that old plant with their labor, actually for their countries, is higher productivity than what they replaced. But those old plants make no sense in the United States if we're going to pay people high wages. So we always are
monetizing
our capital equipment to allow American workers to get the kind of salaries Americans like to achieve. Fred, you can't do that with low productivity.
Fred, if you look back across history, if you look back, I mean, look over the last 1,000 years of American and European history, and you find that every time markets have been extremely free, you've had real laissez-faire economics playing a real significant role in the marketplace, what you end up with is a very wealthy class, a very small, very wealthy class, a very small mercantilist class that you might call the kind of the middle class, but a very small one, and a very large class of working poor.
Well, that's a nice Marxist interpretation of history, but it's wrong. In fact, the greatest periods of democratization of the lifestyles that are always there, rich, wealthy, elitist, protectionist-type countries always do, the rich always do well. They do well in almost every country. What democracy, what market democracy does is extend those privileges down.
Walmart, well, tell me a time in history.
The biggest corporation in America, because Walmart wasn't serving middle class particularly, it certainly wasn't serving the rich, it was allowing poor people to have some of the purchasing power that had been denied before. Sears wasn't good enough. Walmart became rich because Walmart found it was possible to cooperate with the poor of America, make their lives better, and make Walmart the
biggest
corporation.
Sure, Walmart is serving the working poor because the working poor is exploding in America as a consequence of the kind of economic policies that you are promoting, Fred.
No. The wealth, egalitarianism, well, I don't know what you mean by wealth distribution, but in terms of
I haven't used the phrase. Fred, we got to take a break here. I'll let you finish that thought as soon as we get back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with Fred Smith, CEI.org, Competitive Enterprise Institute. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
March's unemployment rate jumped up 0.1% to 5.7%, even though 308,000 new jobs were created last month. The good news is the nation's manufacturing sector, which has been hemorrhaging jobs for more than 3 straight years, actually gained some in March. The bad news is that America's workforce participation rate, which measures those working and those actively looking for work, fell to 65.8%, its lowest level in 2 decades. The time it takes someone to find a new job continues to creep upward as well. The unemployed can expect to spend a little more than 5 months now on their hunt.
The U.S. Army reopens its Walt Disney World Resort. Shades of green, but the park's magic is gone as far as its former employees are concerned. That's because the once unionized $92 million resort, which is open only to military members and veterans, now employs only one union member. Between 60 to 100 jobs belonging to members of the American Federation of Government Employees were contracted out by the Army to private non-union companies.
The $500-plus million stock swindling and corruption case against former Tyco International CEO L. Dennis Kozlowski and CFO Mark Swartz suffered a serious setback Friday when the judge declared a mistrial. This after nearly 2 full weeks of tense jury deliberations and controversy over hand gestures a female panelist made to the executive's team of defense lawyers. The mistrial came about after that same juror reported receiving a threatening letter at her home sometime on Thursday. Manhattan's district attorney vows to retry the Tyco case. A new hearing's been scheduled for early May.
Popcorn lung may afflict workers far beyond the Jasper, Missouri plant where the disease was first diagnosed. According to NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, debilitating lung problems have sprung up among employees of 4 out of 5 popcorn plants the agency has investigated. NIOSH has also heard reports of lung ailments from 3 other popcorn factories and 4 factories producing the artificial butter flavoring believed to be responsible for popcorn lung.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with a scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it took a little time, but I guess you finally learned that promises get broken and bridges do get burned. You've been sifting through the ashes, just trying to find a flame, holding on to nothing. You're a victim of the game.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 26 minutes before the hour. We're talking with Fred L. Smith, the president and founder of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, on the web. And, Fred, we got a couple of callers here. Did you want to make a final point on that last one when we got cut by the break?
That's a problem when you're covering so much material, you forget what your last point was.
Yeah, there you
I
go.
Think the main thing I'd like to just add to what I just was saying is that, remember, if we really care about the peoples of the world, it's the peoples of the world. Four-fifths outside the United States, not the working poor in America, but the abysmal poor of India and China and elsewhere. And those people, if they're not allowed to cooperate with Americans in producing wealth and benefiting because we can buy their goods, they're going to stay abysmally poor. I think we have to think about a world citizenry, not just our own special interests here in the United States.
Well, that all sounds really good, but what I hear behind your words is, let's have an international economy, lowest common denominator. Let's let Americans compete with Malaysians in the marketplace. But at the same time, we're going to put up barriers. So we're going to reduce all the barriers for the transnational corporations. But we're going to keep intact barriers for human beings. If a Malaysian wants to come to the United States, sorry, they can't do that.
Well, as you know, I mean, you may not know, most of us believe that a lot more movement, a freedom of people's movement, would be necessary, too. There are differences of opinion in the various groups, but we're not opposed to immigration.
So ultimately, it does really all just boil down to cheap labor and corporate
profits.
No, it
doesn't. It boils down to people having the opportunity to do whatever God gave them their skills to do. And the world today, United States, not escaping this, in most of the world today, people are tremendously handicapped in their ability to utilize their own skills, their own abilities to realize their own dreams. America, compared to most of the world, is relatively free, but we're a long, long way from the freedom that people like myself and I suspect you, although what we define as freedom, I think, might go in opposite directions.
So we have countries, you know, like the Scandinavian countries, for example, that have very, very strong middle classes, where CEOs typically never earn more than 30 times what the lowest paid employee, sort of like the civil service in the United States, where it's, you know, 20 to 1 is the maximum ratio. Most universities, 20 to 1. And very strong middle class. We built a middle class in the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, unionization, minimum wage laws, things like this. You said that there are times in history when laissez-faire economics, just, you know, let the corporations run the show economics, have produced a middle class. Please name one.
Well, sure. Around the world today, but in the United States, the history, England's about 50 years before us. So in England, it's about 1780 to 1880. The United States' greatest period of economic liberty was roughly the Civil War through the 19th, through about 1890. So about 1840 through 1890 is America's freest period. That's the part where America is growing about as fast as it can grow, where wealth is being dispersed more rapidly than ever before. When the progressives came in, they slowed that down, made it possible for business special interests to align themselves with government to create the kind of cartelized crony capitalism world that I would hope you would oppose. I certainly do. But that's, of course, what happens when government gets involved. It doesn't deal with people.
You know,
it deals with the special interest.
Respectfully, I have to say you don't know your history.
Well, I know my history, I suspect.
I'm sorry, but you know, there was not a golden era of the middle class. You know, by the Great Depression of 1893, you had almost nobody in the middle class. I mean, that's what brought about the progressive movement. The 1872 split in the Republican Party between the progressive faction and what became the progressive and populist movement and the Republican Party, which up until that time had been a reform party, was largely about economics. And really, it started with the Depression of 1853 and 1857.
I mean, I'm not denying that economics is a really strong role. I mean, the whole...
No, but what I'm saying is when the rich were running the show, that is to say government was not getting involved and saying, yes, we're going to have minimum wage laws, yes, we are going to allow unions. I mean, you know, Abraham Lincoln was the first president to advocate for unions. You know, they used to put the word strikes in quotes.
Lincoln would have lived longer, would have had probably a much more European-style government.
Right, and throughout that period of time, there essentially was no middle class. The closest thing we had to the middle class in the United States were farmers.
What do you mean? You mean to tell me that you believe there were 1 or 2% of the population with all the wealth and everyone else was this proletariat, Lupin proletariat? That's a foolish, that's silly.
But that's what history says.
No, it doesn't. America always had a middle class. It had a bigger middle class in colonial times than most countries, many countries in the world do today. And it developed that middle class steadily throughout its history. And by the Industrial Revolution part, it's pouring people into the middle class.
Well, we were very entrepreneurial right after the Revolution.
But
prior to the Revolution, we were largely dominated by the East India Company. And that, I mean, you know, many would argue that that's what the Tea Act of 1773, which is a huge tax cut for the East India Company, was what started the revolt. It was a revolt against transnational corporations messing in our economies.
Well, I agree with you that the reaction against national corporations in the 19th century and transnational or multinational corporations today has tremendous similarities. In fact, I've written about this too. I think, in fact, many of the same, I would say, confusions, you would say, of deliberate provocations that led to the antagonism to the national corporation in 1890 are leading to that in the 1990s and so forth. But I think it's for both reasons. It was a mistake then. It's a mistake now. Progressivism set back America, and the anti-globalization movement is going to set back the globe.
Yeah, and see, I'd say my read of history is that the progressive movement was a reactive one, not a proactive one, and they were reacting to these kinds of what they perceived as injustices. Anyhow, we've got Brian in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, on the line. Brian, let's bring in some other voices here. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Smith.
Hi, Brian.
It may be good to have a Walmart for, you know, the poor, so they can buy food, buy clothes and other products. But is it good for the local economy? You're hemorrhaging all these small, locally owned stores. The sweatshops that are being used to produce this product or the products, what are your opinions on that? What about local businesses and the sweatshops that are being used, the people that are being exploited? And I'll hang up and let you answer.
Yeah. Well, that's a fair question, and generally deals with the difficulty of achieving a future without going through the pains of the present. You know, just like having a baby means you barely have painless childbirth, you rarely have a new economy emerging without some transitional difficulties. When the supermarket emerged in the early post-war II, or actually a little bit before that period, a lot of mom and pops were thought to be, and many were, put out of business, because they couldn't offer consumers the same value that the supermarket
could.
Well,
but using
that
example...
And in fact, we got lots of mom-and-pops back again in the convenience stores. We have them both. We have the convenience of the sort of modernized mom-and-pop store, and we have the...
But they're all owned by about five corporations. And you know, the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company was actually prosecuted for Sherman antitrust violations back in the
40s. I know, it just shows you how absolutely foolish the antitrust laws were. Here's a company that could barely find a store in the United States of that, and everyone was terrified. They would dominate the food industry. You don't need many companies in a free society, one or two. In fact, actually one's all you really need to create competition.
One company can create competition.
Sure, as long as entry's free. Because all that company can do is every day try to persuade you and I to buy his products, and any time we decide the price or the quality are inadequate, we take away their ability to have any influence at all in our society. Look at IBM. Look at the many auto companies. Look at the way in which we discipline markets every day.
Yeah. And at the same time, I mean, for example, I knew some people in New Hampshire who rolled out a really great little product that enhanced the IBM, you know, that worked on the IBM platform. And they had a business plan. They had pulled together $250,000 of investment. They had, like, you know, 12 people. They had this little business going. They were doing really well. Microsoft comes along and rolls out the product for free. Puts them out of business because they had the economic power to do it. I mean, it's not competition.
Consumers decided that rather a zero price than a positive price. I don't see any reason why consumers shouldn't have the option of free goods if they can get them.
Yeah,
it depends on whether you are trying to protect business or whether you're trying to protect consumers. A lot of the progressive movements viewed their role as protecting those businesses for whatever reason they thought were deserving. And
see, I don't think it's a choice between those two. I think ultimately the large question that we have to ask is what kind of society do we want to live in? What kind of world do we want to live in? And do we want to live in a world where particularly our commons are controlled by corporations who are dancing to the profit motive as opposed to in institutions that we, the people, created in 1776 that are at least in theory responsive to us, and if they're not, we should fix them rather than replace them with corporations.
Well, we both agree, I suspect, that we've deviated sharply from the America that was created by our founding fathers. I mean, I've been arguing for a long time the Constitution may not be perfect, but it's a lot better than what we have now. And I think there's been plenty of transgressions that you and I might agree on, some of the civil liberties reductions, but an awful lot I suspect you wouldn't, like the infringement on economic liberties. But in any event, the point is, institutions are critical, but institutions, at least those of the liberal type, the classical liberal institutions, disperse power. Property rights move property from the commons, where special interests will control it through government, to individual hands, where to varying degrees, depending on the degree of property rights, it can actually be used the way you or I or somebody totally different might.
Wait a second. You just set up as down. You just said if we the people, if the government owns something, then special interests are going to use it. But if it goes into private hands, then that's not a special interest?
No, because it's not a special interest. It's lots of special interests. It's your interest and my interest and Bill and Jones and.
So if we sell off Yellowstone National Park to Disney, it's gone from the hands of a special interest into something that's not a special interest.
Where do you think special interests are more dominant today, in the western lands run by the Interior Department, the Bureau of Land Reclamation, and so forth, Forest Service, or in the east where the lands are dispersed among the hands of millions, tens of millions of Americans?
Well, I think it
seems to me that's quite clear when you give government the control over 1/3. Of America's land surface, you result in the kind of corruption that has gone all the way back to Teapot Dome.
I don't disagree, but I would say that what has caused that is the fact that corporations have risen up and acquired the rights of personhood, and what we're seeing is the corruption of the governmental process. It doesn't mean the government is bad. It means we need to stop the corruption.
Well, you've got to ask yourself a question. If government is so easily corrupted, why should we put so much power in its hands? From the very beginning of giving government more and more power over control, we obviously create a lure that leads unscrupulous individuals, sometimes ideologues, sometimes businessmen,
to
go in and create special privileges.
We need to redefine the rules of the game.
We want to concentrate power like you guys.
I mean, through the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, it was called bribery and influencing. Now it's called lobbying. It used to be against the law. Let's take a call here. Harold, a trucker in Utah, is on the line. Harold, change the topic for us. What's up?
I don't know if I'm going to change the subject, but I wanted to kind of go back to the outsourcing issue.
Okay, good. Good.
Hello?
That's what we're supposed to be talking about.
There you go. You're on the air. Let's talk about outsourcing.
Okay, yeah. Well, the problem, I think, is the American consumer in itself. Everybody wants a $20 an hour job, but everybody wants to go and pay $150 for television. The two can't be met.
Exactly.
I think what we need to do is, number one, downsize the government, get rid of some of these social programs, and be able to lower our taxes to the point where we've actually got more disposable income.
And what is that going to accomplish, Harold?
That's going to put more money back in the hands of the people.
And what's that going to accomplish?
That's going to allow us to feed the national economy and allow the.
I used to work in India where they, you know, the social programs are pretty minimal. You walk out the front door of your house and there's literally lepers grabbing at your hands asking for money. So, you know, you do away with social programs, that you would like that.
No, I didn't say do away with them. I said cut back with them.
I see.
Cut back okay. On government.
We spent about $55 billion on social welfare for humans. We spent about $150 billion in welfare for corporations. That's okay with you?
No. I think the programs need to be cut across the board. Yeah. However, welfare for the corporation helped to stimulate and maintain the economy, whereas welfare programs for individuals don't tend to do that.
Well, actually, I would suggest to you that the absolute reverse is true, because when you give money to poor people, they spend it immediately. And when you give money to corporations or to wealthy people, they tend to save it.
Let me disagree with both of you guys to some extent.
Okay.
I think that government welfare makes bad judgment on both cases. It tends to discourage too much work effort or an educational effort on the people who really need motivation, the working poor. It tends to create corporations who spend more time in Washington trying to please politicians than out in the field trying to please consumers.
Okay, I agree with you.
Not very good at picking winners and losers.
I agree with you, and I think the best welfare program is a job. The best welfare
Absolutely.
Program is a job. Xavier,
and the best way to create jobs is to have real work for real people to do, and the way to do that is to let people provide whatever services, talents they have, and they dispersed across the population, and let them get the best deal they can when they go to the store to buy it, whether it's Walmart.
And I would say, if we're going to protect the United States, that I actually am a protectionist. I agree with Tench Cox, who in 1784 got the first protectionist tariffs to protect domestic industries, quote unquote, passed in the United States. And I think that I think it's nuts that we can't make a missile guidance system without buying a part from China. I think that's just plain old nuts. Xavier in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Xavier, what are your thoughts on this?
Hey, hi, good morning, guys. I want to take a tack somewhere in between the two of you, I think. I agree with what you said, Tom, about lowest common denominator. I do think that we do need to bring up the standards of everybody worldwide as far as environmental laws, consumer laws, worker laws, things like that. I saw this movie quite a while ago. It was called Meituan. Is about coal mining and stuff and unionization.
Yeah, you got 30 seconds here, Xavier.
One of the points they made was they said, see this man? He's a worker. No matter what country you're in, you're a worker. So what I'm thinking is that the value of the dollar is arbitrary. And in the short term, there's going to be some problems. But in the long term, we need to start equalizing these things. I don't think I'm going to be able to say this in that quick. But
I don't think so either. And we'll let Fred respond to that. Xavier, thanks for the comment. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Nitrates from the Midwest are a major nuisance in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every spring, a vast expanse of the Gulf of Mexico loses so much oxygen that people describe it as a dead zone where fish cannot survive. The problem begins when nutrients come down the Mississippi River and feed huge blooms of algae. Some experts say the dead zone would cover less of the Gulf if healthy wetlands covered more of the upper Midwest. The nutrients that cause the problem are nitrates that are used as fertilizer on farm fields. When too much fertilizer is used, the nitrates get into groundwater. From there, they seep into tributaries of the Mississippi, and then they're on their way to the Gulf. Jean Barr is a hydrogeology professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and she's an expert on contaminants in groundwater. She says nitrates travel easily in groundwater, and that's one of several reasons why they're a problem.
First of all, we're adding nitrogen to the landscape, and so there's a huge excess overall because nitrate is so soluble in water. And we are farming right up to the edges of streams, which means that the distance that the groundwater moves through the subsurface before it gets to the stream is fairly short.
Microbes in waterlogged soil near these farm fields will chew up nitrates and break them down into harmless nitrogen gas. But a lot of wetlands in the upper Midwest have been drained and turned into farm fields. Barr says that's short-circuited the natural processes that break down the nitrates in groundwater. Experts say restoration of wetlands in the upper Midwest is an essential part of reducing the impact of nitrates on the Gulf of Mexico. That problem is widely regarded as a national issue because it affects one of the most important fisheries in U.S. waters. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 4 minutes before the hour, we're wrapping up here the second hour of our program, talking with Fred L. Smith, president and founder of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, depending on how you want to view it, a front group for American industry or an advocate of the free market. Welcome back, Fred.
Always glad to be back.
And
I noticed that you're on the ads, basically. You do a bit of outsourcing yourself, too.
How's that?
I mean, America benefits from having goods that we can... The original Greek term for trade was making a friend of strangers. And one of the great things about global economies and free trade is that it allows Americans to make friends through exchange with peoples around the world. And that is doing a tremendous amount to make it possible for Indians and others around the world to live better lives. Ask the Indians. Don't ask us.
Yeah, but don't you think, though, that we should be concerned with the United States of America first?
Of course we should. We should be, because this is what...
Then why the argument that, oh, this is good for India?
Well, because if you believe in a world that is fair to the United States, and we take care of the United States, but we allow Americans, if they wish to do so, to be fair to the rest of the world, then you can only be in favor of a free trade society.
I strongly disagree. First of all, our free trade might be ultimately even destructive to them. I mean, every nation has its own unique characteristics, its own unique economies.
Well, the World Bank doesn't think that. The IMF doesn't think that.
I know, and look at the mess they've made.
None of the countries think that. All of the... Basically, the only way that the poor countries of the world are ever going to get out of poverty is to hitch their wagons to economies that are pulling them out. And we can do that. We're a wealthy country.
Sure, we can
get... By allowing them to sell us our goods, they do better.
We can get poorer, they can get richer. 1-800-1-866-889-8894. Bob in Texas, final thoughts here, and then we'll give Fred the last word. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, I've been over to Mexico, and I've seen what it's like. I've seen whenever these folks are making televisions and things, and the way they live in abject poverty. They live in filth. We're not making their lives better, or they'd all be the middle class right now.
But, Bob, and the CEO of General Electric makes more money that way.
Coming across the border.
Well, it's a good trip, but it's a good chance. But you're not comparing them to what American lifestyles. You're comparing them to what they were living like. Look, we all go from horrible existence that none of us can even dream of because we're hundreds of years away from them to the kind of abject poverty you see in countries like Mexico to the kind of lifestyles that the working poor live in America.
We got to wrap it up there, Fred.
To the GE lifestyles. The world's opposite.
Fred,
well, everyone has a
I got
not
it.
Just
I got it, but I'm sorry. The clock is running out. I appreciate
okay,
it. Fred Smith, CEI.org.
Okay,
Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's Fred Smith. This is the Tom Hartman radio program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Supporters of an anti-American cleric rioted in four Iraqi cities Sunday, battling coalition troops in the worst unrest since the spasm of looting and arson immediately after the fall of Saddam Hussein. At least 22 Iraqis, 8 U.S. troops, and 1 Salvadoran soldier died. Sunday's violence, along with the unrelated killings of 2 Marines in Anbar province, pushed the U.S. death toll to at least 610. Hundreds were wounded as fighting raged in Baghdad, Najaf, Nasiriya, and Amara. Tanks rolled through the Iraqi capital, and 2 Humvees burned in the streets of its eastern Sadr City neighborhood. The riots were ignited by the arrest on Saturday of an aide to anti-American cleric Muqtada el-Sadr, known to his reverend followers as al-Sayed, or Master. The Bush administration may have to consider extending its June 30th deadline for the transfer of sovereignty in Iraq, or risk seeing the country lapse into civil war, the head of the U.S. Senate's Foreign Relations Panel said on Sunday. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Richard Lugar of Indiana and the panel's ranking Democrat, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, said in separate interviews that more troops may be needed to stabilize Iraq amid growing violence, including deadly clashes in a Shiite section of Baghdad that killed 7 U.S. soldiers. The lawmakers also chastised the Bush administration for failing to produce a plan to deal with the newly sovereign Iraq and touted a Biden proposal that would give NATO a major new security role and establish a UN commissioner for Iraq who would answer to the UN Security Council. John Kerry is launching a campaign to portray himself as a fiscal conservative, comparing his economic strategy with the $6 trillion in unpaid spending that he says George W. Bush has proposed over the next 10 years. A Kerry spokesman likened Bush's spending to that of a drunken sailor, saying that if a family managed their household budget like this, they'd lose their house, their car, and any hope of building a brighter future for their children. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They're full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Police rescued a Boston woman from the jaws of her 7-foot Burmese python after the snake clamped onto her arm and started squeezing. Wanda Nunes told the Boston Herald that her python Moma went for her arm shortly before she planned to feed her 2 rats Saturday morning. Her 13-year-old son called police after trying and failing to pull the snake off his mother. 2 police officers were able to pry Moma off Nunes and put her back in the cage. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Richard Clark really stung the Bushies, didn't he? Clark, a longtime counterterrorism chief, recently broke silence to reveal that George W. himself, as well as such aides as Donnie Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, refused to take the al-Qaeda terrorist threat seriously prior to September 11th, instead focusing single-mindedly on Iraq, which posed no threat to the U.S. Even after al-Qaeda terrorists attacked us, Clark says the Bushites irrationally diverted our forces to Iraq. Clark bluntly says he's outraged to see Bush now using the symbols of the September 11th horrors as a campaign device when he did nothing to stop the attacks despite ample warnings. The Bushites have since waged a White House jihad against Clark, calling him a left-wing, Democrat-hugging, partisan sourpuss who is a disgruntled, politically motivated bureaucrat angry that he didn't get a higher job in the Bush regime, and worst of all, he's a friend of an advisor to John Kerry. So there you have it. Clark has no credibility to debate over. They wish. Clark is a registered Republican. He is a career national security official with 30 years of public service. So valued was his terrorism expertise that he was continued as a top White House security aide by Ronald Reagan, Daddy George Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Morton Abramowitz, a top intelligence appointee under Reagan, says bluntly, "I can only tell you I think Dick has enormous credibility, a first-class intellect, very dedicated, a serious player. You can't overlook what Dick is saying. What he's saying is shocking." Bush and his insiders knew that Iraq was not behind September 11th, yet they knowingly sent Americans to die there under false pretenses. Clark says, "I think for a commander-in-chief to allow that to happen is unconscionable." This is Jim Hightower saying, "The Bushites can try to smear Clark, but they're the ones with an indelible stain on them."
I wonder who this unexpected guest might be. Good afternoon.
A circus. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is more versatile flooring with Plitanium Plywood from Georgia Pacific. Unlike other subfloor materials which limit your flooring options, Plitanium allows you to use hardwoods, carpeting, vinyl, or ceramic tile. Plitanium Plywood. Build it better.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use it to...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Should you smoke saw palmetto? Good question. I've never tried it. Interesting conversations we have in our chat room here, which you can find by going to www.tomhartman.com and click the chat button. It'll drop you into the Democratic forum on CompuServe. Not wanting to be particularly partisan, but it's a nice little homeland for us. Place to hang out. It works. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. President Bush, the flip-flopper-in-chief. The Center for American Progress put together a David Strode, actually a great guy, put together a nice summary of these things. This is just great. The Department of Homeland Security, first he opposes it, then he supports it. You remember when George Bush said, creating a cabinet office doesn't solve the problem. You still will have agencies within the federal government that have to be coordinated. So the answer is that creating a cabinet post doesn't solve anything. And then he says, a little later, so tonight I want to ask the Congress to join me in creating a single permanent department with an overriding and urgent mission. Securing the homeland. Yes, indeed. Weapons of mass destruction. They're definitely there. We found the weapons of mass destruction. This is an absolute, actual verbatim quote from George W. Bush. We found the weapons of mass destruction. We found biological laboratories. For those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them. He said that May 29th, 03. I'm amazed that that clip hasn't been played more. You know, he was, it just amazes me that. Anyhow, in the meantime, on February 7th, David Kaye has found the capacity to produce weapons, says President Bush. This is on Meet the Press. And when David Kaye goes in and says we haven't found stockpiles yet, and there's theories as to where the weapons went, they could have been destroyed during the war, Saddam and his henchmen could have destroyed them as we entered into Iraq, they could be hidden, or they could have been transported into another country, and we'll find out. Flip-flopping on free trade, he supports free trade, and then he supports restrictions on free trade. He's after bin Laden, dead or alive, I want justice. There's an old poster out west, I recall, says wanted dead or alive. And then on 13th of March, he says, I don't know where he is, I have no idea, and I really don't care. It's not that important. The environment, he supports mandatory caps on carbon dioxide before the election. After the election, he opposes mandatory caps on carbon dioxide. He resists an outside investigation on weapons of mass destruction intelligence failure. Then he supports an outside creation of the 9 Commission. He opposes the 9/11 Commission. Then he supports the 9/11 Commission. He opposes a time extension for the 9/11 Commission, and then he supports the time extension for the 9/11 Commission. Then he says that there's only a one-hour testimony for his testimony, limit for his testimony before the commission. And then he says, oh, there's no timeline. Gay marriage, Bush says gay marriage is a state issue back on June 15th of 00. Now he wants a constitutional amendment banning it. Nation building, Bush opposes nation building. This the governor, if we don't stop extending our troops all around the world nation-building missions, then we're going to have a serious problem coming down the road. This is George Bush, Canada Bush, October 3rd. And now he says, we will be changing the regime of Iraq for the good of the Iraqi people, March 3rd, 06. Saddam and al-Qaeda link. Bush says it's impossible to distinguish between al-Qaeda and Saddam. Quote, you can't distinguish between al-Qaeda and Saddam when you talk about the war on terror. End quote. Actual quote, George Bush, 9/25/02. And then, of course, on 9/17/03, 1 year later, and I quote, we've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved in September 11. UN, it just goes on. And I mean, there's just pages of these things. Because campaign finance, he supports it, he's opposed it. Palestinian conflict, he opposes summits, then he supports summits. The UN resolution, he says we're going to go with the UN no matter what. And then, oh, now we're not. The master of the flip-flop, George W. Bush, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Doug in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. I got a theory I just wanted to throw at you. Well, my first question was for the caller, but he's gone. I was wondering if the corporations were willing to pick up the tab that our government presently pays for in regards to the side effects of mass loss of job, alcoholism, domestic violence, all those things, those programs that need to be...
Well, clearly they're not. I mean, the whole corporate agenda, ultimately, I mean, and not to paint all corporations with one broad brush, but basically the agenda has to be to internalize profits, maximize profits, and externalize costs. If you can dump the costs on the taxpayer, as Walmart does, you know, you've got it's an incredible percentage. I don't have it right here on my fingertips, but it's somewhere between 20% and 30%, the last study that was done, I believe it was down in Georgia, of Walmart employees are on food stamps or eligible for food stamps. I mean, you externalize your costs, you let the taxpayers pick up the toss, and you internalize your profits. It's an old game.
Well, here's the other theory that I have, and that is corporations are setting up bases in third world nations right now, and I imagine the same thing's going to take place that happened here in the 1920s and 40s, the labor revolts. When the labor parties in these third world nations get enough clout and are able to set up the same kind of restrictions that we have here in the United States, the corporation's going to need someplace to go.
Yep.
So what better way is to pull us down as far as they possibly can, put us in a position that when it does come time for them to leave the third world nations to keep their profits as high as they possibly can, they're going to need to come here. Does that sound viable?
Well, no, ultimately I don't think so. I think that they are they're devastating the American economy with their policies. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think it's part of a plan to you know, a circular path. I'd say that if you want to look at a kind of conspiracy theory, as it were, or perhaps better, the law of unintended consequences, the conservative mantra of do not allow people in third world countries to have access to information about birth control. There's this, you know, the Bush administration has dramatically cut back the, and we're not talking about abortion here, we're talking about birth control. The Bush administration has dramatically cut back the ability of the United States to participate in international funds that give women access to birth control in poor countries. And the consequence of that is millions and millions and millions of unwanted pregnancies. And the consequence of that is a never-ending supply of cheap labor for our corporations.
Right.
Now that's where you can tie the social and economic policies together, and you know whether I you know again I don't think that you know the heads of the big corporations are sitting around going let's deny women birth control so we can have more free labor. I mean maybe some of them are, but, you know, there's probably a few of them who are smart enough to realize that there is a cause and effect relationship there, and they're probably pretty high up in the Republican Party. But the bottom line really is that's the consequence. It's you know. The more poverty there is in the world, the more exploitable labor there is, and you know, on a go. I mean, here in the state of Vermont, I know that in 1776, when the American Revolution was fought, and Vermont was not one of the 13 colonies, at that time, 4 out of 5 citizens who lived in the state were indentured laborers. I mean, there was no middle class in America, a very, very small one. There was that small mercantilist class that people like Ben Franklin and Paul Revere belonged to. But basically, you had subsistence-level farmers who were just struggling as hard as they could to get by. In fact, as late as 1870, more than half of Americans who worked owned, you know, had family farms. That was the largest single block, voting block, up until, it started falling apart in the 1880s, 1890s.
And those people that had the subsistence farms, though, were able to grow their own food. I'm part of the working poor. I actually live out of my van in order to survive where I'm at. But the farmers or the subsistence farmers were able to keep food on their table. A lot of the homeless people that I know here in Santa Fe, they're totally reliant on handouts from people in order to eat every day.
Yeah.
And the
That's a tragedy. Well, I mean, you know, this is the absolute natural and normal consequence of conservative economic policies.
And then one of the other byproducts, or the next stage, is enough people get in this position that they actually revolt.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, in the 1870s, 1880s, there were a series of, it was during Grover Cleveland's administration, so I believe that was the early 1890s. I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember exactly when he was president, but just before the turn of the century. There were 22 separate times that people went into Washington, D.C. and set up what they call Cleveland armies, which were the kind of precursors to the Hoovervilles that came while Hoover was president, where most of them were farmers who were losing their farms, by the way. And they set up camp and said, do something, please do something. And Cleveland, who was this momentary blip of a Democrat being president there, he says, I'm not going to do anything. I believe in the free market. And they threw him out after one term. I mean, they say, we're not going to put up with this. So,
Thank you for your time, Tom.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Doug. 1-866-889-8894. I've got Ralph Nader's open letter here. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. Ralph Nader, the electoral system in our country is rigged in many ways against third parties and independent candidates having a level playing field chance to compete. Yes, right. I mean, it's true. He's right. And it was rigged that way by the founders of this country. And so what he's saying is the rules of the game are such that if somebody comes in and plays as a third-party candidate, they're going to screw things up for whoever they're most closely aligned with of the two major parties. And therefore, now this is where I don't get the logic. He points this out. He says, here's the problem. And he says, and therefore I'm going to run and screw things up. I mean, somebody set me straight. Maybe I'm missing something here. It's, the duopoly. Yes, there's a duopoly. Absolutely. What should we do about it? In my opinion, we should infiltrate the Democratic Party and take it over. Just like people like Fred, our guest in the last hour, have infiltrated the Republican Party and taken it over. I mean, you know, he runs this think tank to do that. It's very straightforward. He says, after thinking about this, you may still, this is Ralph Nader, you may still judge that the infinitesimal risk that is worrying you is too important to take compared to the higher risk that the Democrats in their present path will not only lose the election to Bush, but maybe lose near the scale of a Dukakis or Mondale defeat and destroy their chances of recovering even one house of Congress with accompanying losses on the state and local ballot lines. Well, yeah! Yeah, Ralph, there's a risk! There's a risk. He says, from our viewpoint, a renewed respect will be accorded the civil liberties of third parties and independent candidates to exercise their right to reform the political system and not to be told to remain silent and not speak by not running. This is just so full of internal inconsistencies and logic. Not running does not mean that you're being told not to speak or to be quiet. Ralph Nader has been outspoken. He's been one of the major agents of transformation for our culture before he ran for office. I would say that Ralph Nader did so much good for this nation before he ran for office. And here he's saying the only way you can participate is to run for office. No, come on, Ralph. Wake up. Smell the coffee. It's the Tom Hartman radio program discussing solutions and not false promises. 20 minutes past the hour.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit, healthy and sexy, then Carbo Blocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was one of you who stood up for you, so you never knew you were a punchline. I could not convince or trust you.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. It's the Tom Hartman radio program with you. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. At 25 minutes past the hour. And I see we have Joe in Provo, Utah on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman show.
Hi, Tom. How you doing, bud?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up with you, Joe?
You're a great guy. I thought I'd set you straight on Ralph Nader.
Good.
I've listened to him a lot. I've followed him. I voted for him last time.
So did I.
You know, and his focus is this. You know, we've got to get past scared politics and go, oh, my God, we got to get, you know, we're never going to get out of this quagmire as long as we continue to go for the less of the worst options. I'm listening to John Kerry right now, and I ain't seeing a whole lot of difference between him and Bush anymore. as we get farther and farther away from the primaries and the energy that Howard Dean brought to the table and Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton, you know, and the alternatives. And, you know, I thought, oh, there's a good chance. And then all of a sudden, now that that's kind of washing away, I'm hearing John Kerry float back into, because those guys are taking money from the same trough as the Republicans. And to me, what Balfe-Nader brings to the table is a very unconnected, genuine conversation about issues, about the fact that we have exploited countries time and time again. And if you just want to go back just to the Middle East, from Mohammed Mossadegh and when we destroyed a fledgling democracy, and then on to
in Iran,
you know, on and on. So,
yeah, Joe, I don't disagree with any of that, but do you know the difference between a representative, you know, a proportional representation, a government based on proportional representation, and a government that's based on first past the post, winner take all elections?
Yeah, and we need to change that. I mean, you've got, like, right now, you've got Greenpeace representatives and people from the Heritage Foundation sitting down together saying, we have got to open up the debate, that these two parties do not allow us to have a debate that the United States people need, the citizens, the caretakers of this country. So I think that because of Balfe-Nader and others like him, and I hope myself too, because as I told you, I'm running for Senate out there on a third-party ticket, and you're finding strange bedfellows coming together, realizing that these two parties are not doing it. They're not.
Then why not take over one of the parties?
You can't take them over, man. These guys are owned by corporations and
the Republicans did an incredible job. I mean, the conservatives did an incredible job of taking over the Republican Party. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower is rolling over in his grave. I guarantee you Dwight Eisenhower would be absolutely. He would be vomiting right now at what the Republican Party is doing.
He and Teddy Roosevelt and Lincoln would all go out and charge the mountain up there.
Yeah,
because of what's going on.
So it's been taken over. So why don't we take over the Democratic Party?
Because I think that we miss the point that life is diversity. I've spent a lot of time in Indian country. I've been down to Australia with the Aboriginals, with the Maoris, and we miss the point. We are diverse by virtue of the
but
fact
India,
that...
But India has proportional representation, India has proportional representation, and for 15 years, Australia has had instant runoff voting. We don't have that in the United States. So if you want to use the political system... And you want to actually change things as opposed to enhance, you know, rigidify the status quo, I believe that you have to infiltrate these parties. I mean, I think it's great that you're running for the Senate on a third-party candidacy, but do you really think you're going to win?
You've talked about the runoffs before, Tom.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. You've talked about how we can do the runoffs. Then it doesn't mess up the proportional representation. If we're doing the voter runoff, which I don't completely understand it. You're my mentor, man. I mean, I listen to you constantly, and I love you bringing home stuff. I grab a hold of it, then I research it, and I make it my own. And, you know, that's the ticket. There's no reason why we can't have 20 parties if we have what you've been talking about in terms of proportional representation.
Yeah. Okay, Joe, I'll give you a quick primer on IRV right after this break. I appreciate the call, and keep getting involved in politics. I think it's wonderful that you are, although I still think that you should be infiltrating the enemy rather than... but anyway, thanks for the call, Joe. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
March's unemployment rate jumped up 0.1% to 5.7%, even though 308,000 new jobs were created last month. The good news is the nation's manufacturing sector, which has been hemorrhaging jobs for more than 3 straight years, actually gained some in March. The bad news is that America's workforce participation rate, which measures those working and those actively looking for work, fell to 65.8%, its lowest level level in 2 decades. The time it takes someone to find a new job continues to creep upward as well. The unemployed can expect to spend a little more than 5 months now on their hunt.
The U.S. Army reopens its Walt Disney World Resort. Shades of green, but the park's magic is gone as far as its former employees are concerned. That's because the once unionized $92 million resort, which is open only to military members and veterans, now employs only one union member. Between 60 to 100 jobs belonging to members of the American Federation of Government Employees were contracted out by the Army to private non-union companies.
The $500-plus million stock swindling and corruption case against former Tyco International CEO L. Dennis Kozlowski and CFO Mark Swart suffered a serious setback Friday when the judge declared a mistrial. This after nearly 2 full weeks of tense jury deliberations in controversy over hand gestures a female panelist made to the executive's team of defense lawyers. The mistrial came about after that same juror reported receiving a threatening letter at her home sometime on Thursday. Manhattan's district attorney vows to retry the Tyco case. A new hearing's been scheduled for early May.
Popcorn lung may afflict workers far beyond the Jasper, Missouri plant where the disease was first diagnosed. According to NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, debilitating lung problems have sprung up among employees of 4 out of 5 popcorn plants the agency has investigated. NIOSH has also heard reports of lung ailments from 3 other popcorn factories and 4 factories producing the artificial butter flavoring believed to be responsible for popcorn lung.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with a scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's becoming the official song of the United States here. George Bush has spent us into bankruptcy. $2 trillion in added debt. I mean, it is just absolutely mind-boggling. Now, welcome back. Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy. It's Tom Hartman on the radio here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Before I take this call, I mentioned to Joe, here's how instant runoff voting works. Let's just use the example of the 2000 election. Let's say that I go down to the polling station and I say, okay, you know, I really, and let's say it's the 2000 election, okay, Nader, Gore, and Bush. Let's say Pat Buchanan's in there too, and because he was in a lot of places. And I think, you know, I'd really like, you know, my first choice would be Ralph Nader, as it was. But, you know, I think it's pretty unlikely he's going to become president. So my second choice would be Al Gore, because I think he'd do a better job than George Bush, even though I think, you know, he's a good guy. But, you know, Ralph Nader, I thought, great guy. Okay, so I'm given a ballot. And I can vote for my first choice for president, and I vote for Ralph Nader. And then I can vote for my second choice, and I vote for Al Gore. And I can vote for a third choice. I'll just leave that blank. And so then the ballots all get tabulated, and we have a situation where nobody has achieved more than 50% of the vote, which is exactly what happened. Nobody had a clear majority. You had Bush with 48%, you had Gore with 49%, you had Ralph Nader with 3%. So at that point, what they do is they say, okay, who got the fewest votes? And you had Pat Buchanan with, you know, 0.1% or something. Let's take those candidates who got the fewest votes. There's no way that they're going to end up with 50%. And we'll eliminate those as the first choices, and we'll replace those first choices with whatever those people chose as their second choice. And I see Ralph Nader says that, you know, some percentage of the people who supported him were actually Republicans. So their second choice presumably would have been for George Bush. But the vast majority, I would say, their second choice would have been Al Gore. So what happens is that if Gore didn't make it in the... if Nader didn't make it in the first pass, then they recount the vote and they say, okay, we're you know, anybody who voted for one of the two main candidates, or whoever, you know, three main candidates, whatever, if you had three different people who got 30% each, for example, those votes are going to stand. But the marginal votes, the ones that really didn't make any difference, on those cases, and that there's no possibility that they're going to win, on those ones, we are going to look at their second choices, at the second choice of the individual voters. So my Nader vote now becomes a Gore vote in this instant runoff election. See, it's literally an instant runoff. Now, you could do it more slowly. You could say, hey, nobody won a majority. We're going to do this all over again. But with this instant runoff voting system, and this is how it works, and hundreds of communities across the United States have put this into place, and it's working very well. The country of Australia put a system like this into place 15 years ago at the national level. It works beautifully because they had the same problem we did. Their democracy was invented, as it were. The systems of it were invented before John Stuart Mill came along with the idea of proportional representation. Now, in proportional representation, the way that most democracies do it is you go in and you vote not for the candidate but for the party. You say, okay, I'm really aligned with the Green Party. I really like what the Green Party has to say. Or here in Vermont it would be the Progressive Party. The Green Party is pretty small here, but the Progressive Party is so big, the Progressive candidate got 20-30% of the vote for governor and lieutenant governor, causing us to have a Republican governor and lieutenant governor now, even though both of them only got like 40% of the vote. So anyhow, you say, okay, I really want to vote for the progressive. So you vote for the progressive, and let's say that there's 100 seats in the House of Representatives. I mean, usually it's done in countries that have what's called parliaments. But let's say that there's 100 seats in the House of Representatives, and 31% of the people who vote green. Well, what that means then is that the Green Party gets to take 31 people and put them into those seats. And usually right up front before the election, they say, if we get these seats, here are the people that we're going to put in. Everybody knows in advance. So you're really kind of voting for the person, but technically you're voting for the party. And if the Republicans got 42%, then they get 42 seats out of the 100 seats. And if the Democrats got, you know, whatever. And that way, now you have a situation where nobody in Parliament or nobody in Congress has a clear majority, and so they have to form these coalitions. That's how Ariel Sharon can run Israel with his warlike hawk policies, when his party, the Likud party, is a minority party. He didn't get more than 50% of the vote, but he's been able to cut deals with some of the other parties and say, listen, I'll give you this if you'll give me that, and you know, it's so ultimately it works out. But it's more democratic than a situation that leaves half the people standing on the outside looking in, or in the case of here in Vermont, more than half of the people voted for somebody other than Jim Douglas or Brian Duby, our governor and lieutenant governor. More than half of the people of Vermont voted for somebody other than these two guys, and yet they're in office. It shouldn't be that way. The solution is instant runoff voting. We can't go to a proportional representation in the United States because that would require radically amending the Constitution. And it just ain't going to happen. You'd have to have a constitutional convention, which in and of itself would be dangerous. The corporations would get their fingers into it. And then each, you know, two-thirds of the states would have to ratify. It's just not going to happen. But instant runoff voting, that's easy. That would be a no-brainer. Could easily be done. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Robert in Clifton, Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks.
I have a radical idea here. I think all Democrats ought to get out and sign Ralph's petitions.
Because?
Get them on the ballot.
Because?
Because the American way is compromise in the middle. The American way is I want $10 for it. You want to give me $5. Okay, I'll go down to $9. You come up to $6. You know, we stop in the middle somewhere. But yet we're polarized in this country. And people would like to compromise in the middle. How can we take over the Democratic Party? Well, how did the neocons take over the Republican Party? They were the far right. But the Republicans didn't purge them. They didn't even denounce them.
They sure tried. You know, in the 1964 presidential Republican convention, Nelson Rockefeller got up and gave a speech in which he decried the influence of conservatives in the party. He talked about how he was getting threats. He was getting hate mail. He was a loyal Republican, and he said we can't have the extremists, the economic extremism and the war extremism in this party. It's going to destroy the party. He got booed down. He got shouted down. The way that the conservatives took over the Republican Party was at the grassroots level, Robert. They started at the ground. In fact, the major institution that they used was the churches.
No, and they're still using them.
Yeah, and I think if we want to take over the Democratic Party, we need to do the same thing from the bottom up, from the grassroots. And rather than having people sign Nader's petitions, I think people should be joining the Democratic Party, showing up at the meetings. And when one of the and when your local party starts going off on saying, oh well, you know, we've got a big donation here from Monsanto, so I think that we should do quack quack quack. You can stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm a member of this party too, and we're not going to do that.
Okay, I agree that that's the ultimate way to go, but remember that Perot was a third-party candidate, and he got to get into the debates. And if we could get Nader into the debates, I voted Nader last time. It was a conscience vote, but this time I think we have a very dangerous situation and need to be more circumspect. But if Nader was in the debates, then Kerry becomes the compromise candidate.
Right, but see,
then
number
Kerry's
one,
no longer the left-wing freaky guy.
Yeah, but number one, there probably will not be debates. George Bush has not agreed to them. He doesn't do well in debates. So the odds are that he won't have debates. Or if he does, they're going to be highly scripted. Number two, if there are debates, I think it's real unlikely that Ralph Nader will be part of them.
Yes, I know he was kept out last time. But it seems to me that we need voices like yours on the left to keep Kerry from trying to become Republican light.
And you can do that most effectively from within the Democratic Party, not from standing on the outside and throwing stones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think instead of having people sign Nader's petition, what we should be doing is we should be getting people to send John Kerry $25 and a letter saying, Kerry, here are the positions that I want you to take. And if you don't take these positions, don't count on my vote.
Well, that may convince him.
And I think that we need as well. You need to be talking to your local elected officials, your state senator, your state congressman, your town officials. I mean, we just had a very contentious vote here in the town that I live in, Vermont, for mayor. You know, it got very political. I mean, at every level, get involved. I mean, even the school board and there's so many opportunities to get involved, and show up for Democratic Party events and speak out. I mean, the reality is that the Democratic Party is not going to go away tomorrow. And if we're going to take power away from the Republicans, we really must infiltrate this party and take it over. Because Ralph Nader's not going to do it. He's just not. It's absolutely not going to happen. And all at the most that he can do is hand the election to George Bush once again. And I just think that that's a destructive thing. I'm sorry, Robert, but that's my thinking on it. 1-866-889-8894. Moving right along here, we've got Joe. We already had Joe in Provo, didn't we? Oh, this must be Roberta from New Mexico. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the program.
Yeah, this sure is, Tom. I have been listening all morning. I've got some new goats here on my farm, but that was a Lollapalooza you had on earlier. That apologist for corporate welfare, whatever he was. I don't know. Why is it that people only call people on the left wacko. That guy was wacko. I mean, when he was born, did his brains go in backwards? He was reversing everything, turning everything upside down. He made no sense whatsoever. And it's frustrating.
Welcome to the wonderful world of conservative economics, Roberta.
Well, you just did a good segue to my point, the reason I'm calling. Politics is the frosting on the cake. The cake is economics. And as long as at the poll you have no choice in an economic system, you can't take over the Democratic Party, Tom. You can't.
Yes,
they're
we can.
They're all going to be a corporate owner.
No, we
Dennis
absolutely can't.
Kucinich is
Roberta,
trying.
Roberta.
He's going to have a lot of delegates there. He's going to have, you know, and why aren't you... Yes, and I want to say to Robert, do that. Do the petition. Do the radical thing. And then do the Democratic Kucinich thing, too. Do as many things as you can. But you're not going to do it because the conservatives, the neocons, the imperial capitalists have only one choice, and that is to rule.
See, this is old thinking, Roberta. I mean, what Howard Dean proved to us...
What you're saying is old thinking. It's reactionary, Tom.
Okay, let's both stop calling each other names. What Howard Dean proved to us is that it is possible that if a million people give $200 each, that you can raise $200 million without any corporate involvement. And we're seeing that right now. The majority of the money that's coming to the Kerry campaign is coming through his website, and it's coming in small donations. And I think we're seeing a real transformation of politics in the United States. And those people who say, oh, we have to give up on the Democratic Party because they are so addicted to corporate money, I think it's tragic that people think that because it's not necessarily true. And Howard Dean proved it.
It is true.
Yeah.
Well. How could it not be true? It's there. It's the economic system that rules. Corporations rule. And you can't take over a party unless you've got the money and the power, and they've got it.
See that,
so it's
Roberta?
A revolt that we need.
Yeah, okay, Roberta. That kind of cynical thinking is what led Bill Clinton to create the Democratic Leadership Council, and now you got all these guys running around going, "I'm a DLC Democrat," and the DLC is all about, yes, okay, the corporations rule. Let's take their money. Let's bring them in. Let's turn into Republican light. And I think it's a destructive thing for the Democratic Party, and I think it's a destructive thing for democracy. I would much rather be out there advocating that people send their $25 and $50 and $10 donations to the Kerry campaign directly. Kim in Missouri's on the line. Hey,
yes,
Kim.
Sir.
What kind of truck you driving there?
Freightliner.
Those are big ones.
My point to the people, and I've said this before, all these people who say we want Nader, we vote for Nader, hell with it. I ask them this question: how many Senate seats do they hold as members of the Green Party? How many House of Representative members do they have holding as Green Party members?
Yeah.
If you want to build a party, you start at the local level in the state and build up.
Yeah.
Because
that's
the barometer of what your national vote is going to be. And like you pointed out, if he's only going to get 5 to 6%, all he's doing is being the spoiler. Why do you think Republicans, or why do these people think the Republicans, after the fiasco where, what's his name, there were three candidates, what's his name, the Texan, took away votes from
Ross Perot. Ross Perot, yeah.
Ross Perot. Why do you think that they turned around and the fall guy was Pat Buchanan? And what did he do? He infiltrated that party, the Reform Party, stole it away, and then did nothing. And he wrote a book that made him look like a total buffoon. And why? Because it killed the Reform Party.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Reform Party represented a threat to the Republican Party.
That's right. And he
absolutely.
Got $12 million of federal money he walked away with because it was legal.
Yeah. Amazing. Kim, thanks for the call.
And Nader should realize, hey, if you want to duke it out in the local level or the Senate seat or House of Representatives seat.
And the Green Parties are doing that all across America, and they're doing a great job of it, and we need them to do more of it. Kim, thanks for the call.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Veronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The oceans are massive and seemingly unmanageable, but an author argues for a piecemeal approach. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The world beneath the ocean is a lot like the land above it, and seeing it that way can help us figure out how to conserve marine life, according to author Rod Fujita.
While the ocean appears to be vast and imperturbable, it's really made up of habitats and living communities, just like the land is. So the same rationale applies to the ocean as does to the land. There are special places. There are vulnerable species in the ocean just as there are on land. So the same kind of conservation ethic should guide our actions in the ocean.
Fujita has written a new book called Heal the Ocean, Solutions for Saving Our Seas. He says while the ocean is an enormous shared resource, we can help it by focusing on its parts. For example, coral reefs. Many of these habitats are suffering from a phenomenon known as bleaching. They're turning white as colorful colonies of algae and other life forms die out due to pollution and warming seawater. Fujita says we might not be able to curb global warming in the short run, but he says reducing pollution, overfishing, and other stresses could help coral reefs recover.
Coral reefs, when you remove the other stresses to them, may have an enhanced capacity to cope with the stress of climate change. I've been out in the South Pacific and in other parts of the world, and I've seen coral reefs come back from tremendous natural disasters like volcanic explosions and huge storms that break off the corals. As long as we're not polluting those or overfishing them, they do have a tremendous resilience and ability to recover.
Fujita says it's not too late to save coral reefs and other marine ecosystems. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
bounty, this seems strange to me. The movies had that movie thing, but nonsense has a welcome ring, and heroes don't come easy. Now nonsense isn't new to me. I know my head, I know my feet, but mischief knocked me in the knees, so just let go.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. 4 minutes before the hour. Let's see, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jeff in Denver's on the air. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, well, coming from someone who's worked on the Nader campaign, who voted for John Anderson, who voted for Eugene McCarthy, I totally agree with you, Tom. I mean, from the outside, nothing has really happened. We do need to work within the Democratic Party right now. We can take it over. And, I mean, this, all this stuff saying, I can't, we can't, that's wimpy stuff that we just need to drop. A lot of people just want to stand out on the outside and whine. And we got to do something.
I agree.
And you can change the party. I've seen it firsthand. I've worked on Democratic campaigns, and I've seen amazing changes that happen very quickly within the party.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a very. It's not complicated. This is not rocket science. If people get involved, if they actually get involved, they step into the fray, and start participating, things will change and start talking to people. I mean, start talking to your elected officials. It's amazing.
A lot of these people, I think, are also getting afraid to get involved in the process because they might have to compromise. I'm an ideologue to a certain extent. But you've got to be pragmatic, too. So, hey, you've got to learn to compromise to some extent. You're not going to get everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and all to tell that to some of the people on the right. I mean, it's just what is absolutely amazing to me, and in a way, in a bizarre way, inspiring, is how complete the conservatives and their religious worldview, and I don't mean religious like church religious, I mean the religion of conservative economics, they're a belief system that defies history and reality, how successful they have been in taking over a major political party. I mean,
exactly.
if they can do it with something that is that with voodoo economics, with something that is that clearly absolute BS, if they can do it that successfully, then we should be able to do it with the Democratic Party with truth on our side.
Yeah, and look how it happened with us voting on the outside for years. Nothing happened. Like, I voted for Eugene McCarthy in the late 70s.
Yeah, me too.
Well, hey, look what happened in the meantime is that
Nixon got stronger.
The outsiders took over the Republican Party in less time than we did. We had no effect on the outside. The Republican Party has taken over in a short time.
There you go. Well said. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks for Rama for filling in and answering the phones and helping out, running the board. Thanks to Brad Walrod for selecting and editing our music today. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Always great to see you. Thanks for all the great ideas you give me. And thanks to you for listening. Join us again tomorrow, same time, same place.
Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the